Love not? Okay.
No, here we go. 3, 2, 1. The champ is here. How are you, sir?
I'm good. I'm good. How
Pull
are
this,
you?
Pull this sucker up about
a bit
like
closer.
Like a fist from your face.
All
it's
right.
Good.
Is there that go. Good?
Good to see you, brother. What's happening?
Oh, nothing much, mate. Nothing much. Just
has it settled in that you're the champ?
Yeah.
Does it
yeah.
still feel real, or is
yeah,
it?
Yeah. It's settled in. You know what I mean? Like it's weird. It's hard to explain. Like I'm the type of person that. You know, as soon as I'm home, I'm daddy. I'm the regular bloke that everyone knew me 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, obviously, you got, you know, the media obligations and everything that needs to be done. So it's, you know, it is different. You're going to get recognised a little bit more on the street. But
what is it like in Australia now? Do people get excited to see you now?
Yeah, Australia, you know, obviously, that's where I'm from. So that's, you know, the supports are big, especially where I'm locally. Like, you know, every time I fight, literally our city, like, stops, you know, just to watch the
What's
fight.
What's the city?
Wollongong. The
what?
Gong.
Say
the
it again.
Wollongong.
Wollongong?
The Gong.
The
yes.
Gong. Where's
yeah,
the
we
Gong?
We call it the Gong. Just Where? South of Sydney.
Oh, okay. So yeah. You're close? So you go to Sydney when you want to get crazy?
Not really. I don't do too much partying and that, except for a couple of days ago when we were in Vegas. So Vegas got me. Got me good.
Did it get you after Izzy won?
Got me before and after. So, I'm on real struggle street, but we're good.
Well, we'll get you some water. We got water here.
Oh, yeah, beautiful.
Do you need electrolytes?
Oh, yeah.
We got some. Bring good. In some of those liquid IVs. Just bring the whole box of it in there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, liquid IV is great. Have you ever tried that shit?
Mm-mm.
It's good. It's real good.
All right.
So it hydrates you twice as fast as regular water alone.
Oh,
it actually tastes good. Salt, electrolytes, all kinds of shit in it.
All right. And then we got this coffee, turmeric coffee.
Yeah, the Laird Hamilton superfood coffee. Yeah, I'm addicted to these little. I'm addicted to the coffee, but I'm addicted to these fucking.
All right. There we go.
Too.
Look at
Here,
that.
Rip one of them bad boys.
Okay.
Chuck it in your water.
Well, yeah. Well, now we're.
This episode is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. If you're looking for something to do this summer, you might want to check out some of the upcoming fights. Even better, if you can catch them up close in person. It's quite an experience. But if you want to get the best seats, you have to act fast. And that's true for a lot of things in life, especially when it comes to hiring for your business. You need to hire the most talented people you can before the competition scoops them up. And to do that, you need ZipRecruiter. And luckily, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Rogan. Got your eye on a rock star candidate? ZipRecruiter's invite to apply feature lets you cut the line. Once you review ZipRecruiter's list of the most qualified candidates for your job, you can easily invite your top choices to apply to encourage them to apply sooner. So, amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Rogan to try it for free right now. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/Rogan. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. This episode is brought to you by MeUndies. For most of the year, fancy underwear technology sounds unnecessary. Breathable, quick dry, moisture wicking, anti-odor. It's a bit overkill, right? But then summer hits and the heat comes. Suddenly, all that sounds pretty damn essential. Be prepared for summer like me with MeUndies. So far, I love the items that I've gotten from them. They're all soft, comfortable, and flattering. I recommend it hands down, and don't worry, MeUndies has a cut for every guy with over 10 different styles, ranging from boxer briefs to jock straps to the new and improved ball caddy. Plus, they come in over 100 different colors and prints, ranging from black to all over sharks. No matter what pair you get, it'll have MeUndies' signature super soft micro-modal fabric. It is amazing. So everything is breathable, stretchy, and oh so comfy. They also offer some of the most summer-proof fabric. So breathe. It's perfect for working out or just keeping you cool on those really hot days. And if you're not happy with your first pair of underwear, it's on MeUndies. Summer is coming. Be prepared with my favorite underwear, MeUndies. Comfort for the outside in. Get 20% off your first order, plus free shipping at MeUndies.com/Rogan. That's MeUndies.com/Rogan. Tap the banner to learn more.
Do that, I guess.
So, you know, I mean, there's becoming the champ, and then there's becoming the champ the way you did.
Yep.
Because you beat the consensus greatest featherweight of all time in his prime, you know?
Yeah.
That's a big deal, my friend.
Yeah, exactly right. You know, it was huge, you know, huge for me. Obviously, I love being the underdog as well. You know, I have been in my last three fights and, you know, I love sort of proving that the doubt is wrong, you know what I mean? And then obviously, again, to beat him like I did as well, to, you know, outfight him, you know, outstrike him and stuff like that. Again, he's a great champion, nothing but respect to him, but for me to go out there and do it like that, you know, that's something I'm very proud of.
Oh, you should be. You should be proud of your whole run, man. I mean, you haven't been in the UFC that long.
Yeah.
It was, you know, I mean, how many years have you been in there now? Less than two.
I think it's two and a bit or
two
close
bit?
To three.
Oh,
yeah.
Is it?
Okay, yeah, yeah, okay. Close to three, yeah, but...
It feels like, well, since the Chad Mendes fight, that's when people started really paying attention.
That's where, things went quick.
That's when people were like, holy shit.
Well, before that, I wasn't even ranked.
Right.
And that's why I wanted that fight. Oh, no, I think I was ranked 10th maybe, sorry. So that's why I wanted that fight. You know, I knew if I took him on, that'll get me straight to, you know, 5th rank. And then that's why I wanted to call out, you know, Aldo after that, because I knew that'll put me in a position where I could, you know, fight for a title.
Yeah.
Shoot for them ranks, as I always said.
What is going on at City Kickboxing? You need to tell me, man.
Yeah,
what?
Well, that's another thing that a lot of people don't realize. I'm actually based in Wollongong, but I go there for my camp.
Right.
So I go there a lot, and man,
it's just... Do you go to the one in New Zealand? Or do you guys have one in Australia?
No, we go to New Zealand.
How far is that flight?
About 2 hours, 2.5 hours. Yeah.
But what made you decide to make that trip?
Well, I've known the guys for a long time. You know, Eugene, Izzy even, and Brad Riddell. Brad Riddell's actually... When I was in Thailand, Tiger Muay Thai, I do a bit of training out there. And he was a striking coach for a while. So I was working with him a fair bit. And, you know, that's when they bring Eugene and Israel. And that's when I started, got to know them and stuff like that. And just ever since then, we've always, sort of got along. And now we're just, you know, we're a part of the team. Me and Joe Lopez is my head coach. But we go there to City Kickboxing and train with the boys. Every camp, we'll go there. You know, we'll go there a couple of times each camp. So I'll do like 2-3 weeks, get back to the family and train, and then go back there again for the last couple of weeks, and then I head to my fight usually.
And where do you train when you're home?
I train at Freestyle Fighting Gym. So that's locally where I am. That's where my first day ever in the gym was, at that gym. So that's still where I am today as well.
That's awesome. So what made you need to make a shift, though? Needed a higher level of competition to train with?
Well, yeah, that's always going to be a big part. You know, again, it's not massive right where I am. You know what I mean? We've got some people, but it's just, you know, we're starting to get a team in that now. But that competitive sort of training partners is a big deal. And my coach has always, Joe's always been a strong believer of, you know, training with so many different levels of, you know, styles, you know, everything, you know what
that's
I mean?
That's a great coach. A great coach that's not worried about you going to another camp and training is a great coach.
Well, exactly right. So, and it works, you know, like no surprises come fight time because I've seen so many different body types, so many styles. You know, I put myself in that position every time, like, you know what I mean? Like every fight camp, I am doing as many different bodies as I can.
Yeah.
Just so, you know, there's no surprises come fight time.
Is that your phone?
Yeah, it was my phone. Sorry about that.
No worries. So when did you start training? What year did you start?
I started, I've been doing it for about, not even 10 years, 9 years. So I actually started MMA training as just to keep fit while I was playing rugby league. So I was, that was when I was 214 pounds. So that's something that obviously when I'm fighting and you say 240 and it'll slowly getting up.
It's your language. You guys have that Australian language. You say things different. 214?
Yeah,
sounds
exactly.
Like 240.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what it's out. 214. 14. Well, that makes more sense, but still it's a ridiculous amount of weight.
100%. You know, I'm 5'6" on a good day, you know what I mean? Give me a good stretch out, do some yoga sessions, I might make 5'6", but you know what I mean? It's just, I was a lot bigger and I wanted to stay fit in between, like sort of the season, pre-season. So that's why I went and started and just loved it ever since. So that was about, 9 years ago.
So, and how old are you now?
31.
Look at you there. Look at you, you fucking gorilla.
Oh, there you go, see?
Look at the size of you. Jesus Christ. You're 31.
Look at that head.
So you were, early 20s. And no martial arts training at all before that?
I wrestled. So I wrestled before I even done rugby league. I wrestled for about... probably a year. I can't even remember. It was, I'd done it for about a year and, I'd done pretty good. It was something that I was actually pretty good at, but, you know, I wanted to play football with my mates and I got over wearing the tights, you know, wrestling and stuff like that. So, it was just something that, I ended up just playing football with a mate. So I sort of gave it up and I was actually pretty good at it. So we won the I won the nationals, like, you know, obviously it's the wrestling's not as big in Australia as it is over here, but, you know, I still won, like, the Australian Championship twice and stuff like that, but then I just gave it up and started playing football. Yeah.
So that's crazy. So you won the Australian Nationals twice?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was, they'd have them every year.
And you'd only been training for a year? You'd only done it for a year?
Yeah, honestly. I remember we used to have a games night, we call it. It was at a PCYC, Police Boys Club. It's just a local club. Usually they'll have, like, games nights, and they had wrestling there. And I just went there one time, and the trainer was just like, oh, you should come and do training, because I was doing all right. So I just started doing it, and then I was actually pretty good. Again, I was always, like, I literally, you know, come out the mother's womb like this, you know what I mean? So I've been this big since, yeah, I've been this big or you know, this height and look this old, like, for, you know, since I was like 12. So I was always, versing guys twice the size of me, and you know what I mean? So I was, you know, older, much older as well. And I used to do well. So that's why a lot of people, you know, thought I was mad, you know, when I gave that up, because I was doing so good. And then the same was at rugby league. When I played rugby league, even people thought I was mad giving that up as well, because that was something I was pretty good at as well.
So what made you decide to make a switch to MMA professionally?
Just my last year of football, rugby league. We won the comp. You know, I got player of the match. I scored a 40-meter try. So you can imagine that guy running 40 meters. So it was just a good year to finish on, you know what I mean? I had a couple of fights as well that year. So I was training at MMA and having a couple of fights while I was playing rugby league.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so that was
during the season?
Yeah, yeah.
During the season you were having fights?
Yes.
So you'd have a game and then you'd have a fight?
Yeah, yeah, pretty much, yeah, yeah. So it was pretty full on and still working, still concreting.
Really?
So, yeah,
Jesus Christ.
It was pretty full on. So a lot happening, you know, and I guess that's probably where I get some of my fitness today as well, you know what I mean? I've just always been a bit of a gamer, and, you know, that's just something I've always done, but maybe from back in them days as well.
Well, I would imagine that just the sheer tenacity and cardio that you would get from rugby. Rugby is a tough fucking sport.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I think Americans should play. I really do. I look at American football, I'm like, take off the fucking helmets. What's up with the shoulder pads? And honestly, I think it's safer. I think rugby's safer. I don't think it's safe. It's obviously a very rough combat sport in a lot of ways. I mean, it's kind of like a team combat sport almost. Mm-hmm. But you were at least not under the illusion that you're protected like American football players have been for so long with the helmets and the pads.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's causing a lot of the brain trauma.
Yeah, with them hard helmets and all that. Yeah, I get what you mean.
Slamming into each other, you know?
Yeah, I guess I can see what you're saying there as well. But, you know, then again, then you're looking at, you know, someone running at, you know, no helmet as well. But I get what you're saying. I actually think, I think you're right. I think you hit the nail on the head with that.
Well, I think they've considered this, but people are so accustomed to football helmets, football pads.
Yep.
So the idea is to just make better helmets and better pads. But according to the guys who really study traumatic brain injury, that's not really going to help, because it's the impact, the head, the brain swashing around inside your skull. That is just so the amount of mass that you have, these guys colliding into each other, it's almost unavoidable.
Yeah, it's like what they actually, when you're talking boxing and that as well. And a lot of people, you know, obviously we've got the smaller gloves.
Right.
But then the boxers, they have more padding, but it's just so many more strikes to the head day in, day out. And they reckon that's actually, you know, can be actually worse for you.
Yeah, I imagine it is. And then also there's nothing else. You're not even allowed to clinch. I mean, if you clinch, they separate you. You know, whereas in MMA, if you get rocked, you could at least protect yourself, you know. And if it goes to the ground, you can hang on, you could try to submit someone, you could try to wrestle with them. There's not a lot of options in boxing, you know.
Mm. Yeah, definitely.
So you did well in rugby, and you had a couple of fights while you were playing rugby. What was it? Was it just a one-on-one aspect of it? Like, what made you decide to focus entirely on that?
Man, I've always loved martial arts. Yeah, always loved it, and I love the fact that, you know, yeah, you're in there by yourself. You know, I've always been a hard, like, worker, yeah? So you could play the best game of your life in, say, rugby league and still lose.
Right.
Yeah, you could do everything right, you know, make thousands of meters, whatever it is.
Someone else fucks up.
Well, yeah, again, you know, I don't want to put it out.
Like, put it out.
Yeah, well, exactly right. Even it could be vice versa. I could play a bad game, we could win. But I love, you know, the fact that I'm such a hard worker. And, you know, I'm always putting the hours in the gym. You know, I'm so dedicated to this sport that so if I lose in that cage, that's on me.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And I love that. I love the fact that, you know, if I am half-assing it, you know, in the gym, you're going to see that come fight time, and I've got no one else to blame but myself. So, you know, that's, I've always loved that. And again, I've just always loved martial arts, even boxing, UFC, even, you know, before I even started, you know, training MMA, I'd like, you know, listen to music and I'd, you know, just picture myself winning the world title and the UFC
really?
Title. Yeah, I've
even
always loved
before you
it.
Were training.
I wasn't even training. You know, it was just something that I've always loved. I actually started watching it back when, I think, because we had a box, you know, you get the chips and you can watch whatever channel you want. Mm-hmm. And the pay-per-view was, I probably shouldn't say that, but anyway. So the pay-per-view was on. And I remember watching Chuck Liddell, Tito Ortiz and Ken Shamrock. That was the first time, their first fight. So that was the first time I ever started watching, like, UFC. And that's when I just absolutely started loving it. So I've always, you know, watched it and loved it and, you know, pictured myself being in there and all that. And I wasn't even training at the time.
That's it. Well, Australians are tough as fuck. It's like, it's a tough fucking place. There's something, they're men. You know what I mean? Yeah. There's a lot of, I mean, I'm sure there's some pussies over there too, but they're men. You know what I mean? Like, that's like one of the ways that people look at Australia.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it makes sense that great combat sport athletes would come out of Australia.
Yeah, exactly right. Especially
it's a prison colony.
Well, now, yeah.
I mean, that's really what you guys started
exactly
off
exactly right, yeah.
You know?
Especially, you know, well, as you're saying, you know, obviously me being looking like this since I, you know, since a young age, like, yeah, obviously you're going to, you know, I'm not the type to brag that, you know, I get into fights and all that sort of stuff. But when I was younger, that would happen. And so I've always been known to fight and been able to fight type of thing. I've always had to, you know, sort of defend myself. Never been the one to start it. But, yeah, there was times where I had to finish it. But, you know, it's just always something that I guess I've had in me.
So, I mean, Australia, you guys have John Wayne Parr, Jeff mm-hmm. Fenech. You guys have had some great combat sports athletes come out of.
Well, that's now it's UFC so big in Australia. So we've always had, as you're saying, very talented guys. You know, we've got a lot of very good athletes over there. But they were always in your rugby leagues mm-hmm. and AFL or whatever it is. Now UFC's and MMA is getting so big that, you know, we're getting these athletes starting to, you know, train MMA. And you're only going to see it grow even more, and we're going to get a lot more champions from our region, I believe.
Oh, I'm sure. Have you ever trained with John Wayne Parr?
I haven't. I've met him. I met him at a UFC event. I think that's the only time I ever met him, to be honest.
He's actually got to get a hip replacement.
Mm.
His hip's fucked up from all his years of kickboxing. His last fight, he retired on his last fight, which is a boxing match.
Yeah, that Mundine. So that was a blowout. Like, you know, Mundine can actually box really well to go out and good on him. He's achieved a lot.
John Wayne Parr's a fucking savage.
Oh, yeah.
He's a straight-up savage.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that guy's, I mean, he's been fighting Muay Thai since he was a teenager.
Yeah.
You know, spent a lot of time in Thailand.
I think I've watched him, actually. This was a long time ago. This was when my cousin was a kickboxer, and I went and watched him. Like, I was very young.
Oh, wow.
And I'm pretty sure it was John Wayne Parr that was, I need to actually hit him up. I need to hit up my cousin. Was John Wayne Parr the main event of that? Because I remember watching. And
I'll connect you and John Wayne if you'd like.
I appreciate that. Yeah. Sweet, for sure. But again, like, I've always been a fan of him too, like, but when I got a little bit older, mm-hmm. But yeah, again, like, it's something that I've always been fascinated about, all combat sports.
So you decide to make the leap. Was it the rugby season was over and you're like, you know what, I'm done?
Yeah, well, while I was fighting, again, my last year, I had a couple of fights. And
how many fights did you have before you quit?
I think I had two.
Right?
I think I had two fights.
And that was enough?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I'm a pretty competitive type of guy. And the fact that, you know, I wasn't at the highest level in rugby league yet, you know, I was 22 and... You know, at that age, you usually, you know, if you're not in, you know, not NRL, as that's the highest, if you're not in the NRL by like 22, you pretty much you ain't getting in, like, sort of like that. And that's how I was. And I'm competitive. So I was like, I don't know if I'm going to make it to the top, even though I was pretty good, you know, made a lot of rep sides and stuff like that. But I was just, nah, you know, I'm going to take this on. I reckon I can go the whole way. And again, like, I've already pictured myself winning world titles and stuff like this. And I even told people, like, before I even started that, oh, I'm going to be UFC champion one time. And they're probably thinking, where are you even getting this? You know, I'm sure a lot of people say that, but
a lot of people have said it.
Yeah, exactly. To actually go out there and do it, though, it's pretty cool.
It's pretty amazing.
Because I remember even having conversations with, like, friends and watching the UFC. Again, I wasn't even training.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember saying, I would have sounded cocky, to be honest, the way it would have come out. But I'm like, I reckon I could do it. I reckon I can do it.
How many fights have you had total?
20-1.
20-1.
21-1? 20-1. I don't even know. We're 20-1, I think.
When did you have your first loss?
That was my third fight, or fourth fight.
Oh, so it was right after you decided to go pro. I mean, right after you decided to make that your life.
Oh, no, it was actually because I had two amateur fights.
Oh, okay.
That went before when I started. So
the amateur fights were when you were doing rugby.
Yeah, I had four amateur fights and went pro. So I didn't have that was against, at the time, Corey Nelson, his name. A little shout out for Corey Nelson. But he was a pound for pound number one. Obviously, it was that welterweight this was. And, it was very early in my career and I should not have took that fight. But win a tournament. And I had him first. So I had the favorite straight up. And again, it was in a division I probably should never have been in.
Right.
But, I took him on and, I don't know, I held my own, but, things didn't go well. But that was, we always talk about, that really, things really, it went a lot better for me after that because I realized that he was too strong. So I thought I have to go, down or I have to start grappling as well. So that's when I actually started grappling after that. My coach was like, all right, you got controlled a bit too much in there. Let's just do jiu-jitsu for the next 3-4 months or whatever it is, just straight jiu-jitsu. I had a jiu-jitsu comp and that's when I started dieting as well, but I remember doing that jiu-jitsu comp and I was on the podium. I ended up getting the gold, so I was on the first podium. They're on the second and third and they're still taller than me, so so these are the guys that I'm so familiar. That's why now I fight at featherweight and I really do look at these, even though they still tower over me because I'm still short in my division, but I look at them and they're like, I'm used to footy players, big front rowers,
right?
Props and fighting middleweight and all these different divisions that I look at these featherweights, I'm just like, they're puny compared to what I'm used to. But
that does make sense, though. I mean, you fighting at 170 is crazy. I mean, that's 25 pounds heavier than what you're fighting at now.
And that was at pro, and again, fighting the top guys. So I fought at Anton Zafir before that, and he was a UFC fighter as well in, welterweight.
So what did you do to drop the weight down, and what do you walk around at?
Now I walk around, I'm a bit heavy after because I obviously broke my hand and stuff like that. But
You broke the hand in the Max fight?
Yes, I did, yeah. I broke that in the Max fight. And
which round?
I'm not too sure. I remember feeling it and throwing it and being like, oh, that hurt. I think from watching back the tape, I wanted to watch back and see where I noticed it. I noticed in the fifth round, that's where I think it happened because you start seeing me, obviously on the offense, I was only using my left hand and stuff like that. Obviously, if he comes at me as well, heat of the moment, I'd throw it, so that's it. Right. So I think it was early in the fifth round, I think.
So you were walking around at now at?
Yeah, I'm about 78 kilograms. What's that? That's over 170. So what's that, 170 something, I guess?
Jesus Christ.
That's heavy. I'm usually around, maybe a couple of kilos less than that usually. But so the weight comes off. I hold a lot of
165-ish,
water. 165-ish.
Yeah,
I guess
there.
You could say that. But I took holidays. I went hard in it. So.
Well, you should celebrate, man.
That's only
one time in your whole life you get to be champ for the first time.
Yeah, exactly right.
This is your time.
But again, I didn't, having the broken hand, I want to train. I'm the type of, try and be I'm a professional, so I'll do what I can. I was still doing as many things as I could, strength condition, building them legs, being able to just throw, a shitload of left hooks and jabs. So I should have a good left hook and jab come next fight. So I got to work a lot on that.
Well, that's great. Now, when you decided to diet down, you were even heavier than you are now. Mm-hmm. What did you do to get your weight down from 214 to a manageable weight where you can make featherweight?
Yeah, it's obviously dieting is just absolute key. You know what I mean? Even now, even when I train so hard, if you're not dieting well, the weight won't come off. So that's how, but starting early, again, I didn't know much, I don't know what I know now, having dietitians and that, I was never doing that. So I just literally ate next to nothing, and I'd train, like I told you, I was playing rugby league, I was, fighting, training, and then concrete, and when I was getting close to fights, I was eating next to nothing. And when I say nothing.
Did you get sick a lot?
100%, staph infections all the time and all that, It's crucial. Obviously there's science to it all, and where now it's an absolute game changer. So I just, pretty much lost my weight that way. So I used to be a little bit, bigger. Obviously, from eating like that as well, you lose muscle, you lose, you're probably losing strength and everything like that. Obviously,
you lose health.
Yeah, exactly right. So, it probably makes me make 145 a bit easier now, but because I don't have as much muscle as I did, but again, it wasn't healthy, and it put me in. I had to miss out fights from bad staph infections and, MRSA and, all that.
Oh, you got MRSA? Yeah. Jesus Christ. Yeah. MRSA scares the shit out of me.
Yeah.
That's terrifying.
It rattles you.
How long did it get you in there for?
What's that, sorry?
How long were you in the hospital for that?
I was in the hospital the first day, but then they just had a nurse that come to your house every morning and night to give you everything. And
Jesus.
So it was pretty full on. And then obviously, you know about when I got cellulitis after the Brazil fight with Aldo.
Well, cellulitis is a form of staph.
Yeah. So yeah. That got in my leg. So it was, I was a rattle, man. So it was crazy. Like, we always talk about how, you know, MMA is such a roller coaster ride, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? So many highs and lows, and that's a perfect example. You know, you go over to Brazil and then beat, you know, one of the greatest featherweights of all time, and then you get put in hospital, and I was there for like a week, you know, with cellulitis.
Brazil?
Yeah, no, that was in Chile. So I was on my way home where it just absolutely rocked me, and I was struggling. I was really struggling, I really was. It was a, you know, I had like 40-plus degree temperatures and all 40 that.
40-plus Celsius?
Yeah. And
should all just why the fuck don't we just go? The rest of the world is on the cellular system.
That's why I'm trying to get today. I was like, even wearing the clothes, I end up dressing up. I was like,
what is 40 Celsius? What is that? In let's guess. I'm gonna say 104.
Yeah, that's high. That's a high one. But yeah, so like 101, 102.
Because whenever my Canadian friends say, "Oh, it's 40 degrees out," I'm like, "What the fuck does that mean? That's cold as shit."
Dead on.
Was it really? Oh,
good stuff.
Happy.
There
very
you
happy
go.
I'm myself. Because but kilos, between kilos and Celsius, I have no idea what I'm talking about.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to keep up with that because obviously, you know, I'm all right now. I always say 145. You know, that's every time I'm 145 champ. You know,
right.
So I'm 214 when I'm talking about that. But again, my Aussie accent, everyone gets that wrong. But
I think it was just me.
Yeah, right here.
Yeah, it's
funny. You know, you always go on like your social media, and there's always like these things, like, you know, they just roll on with like certain things, like, you know, whenever I'm posted, everyone will try and say I'm a New Zealander, and like they just start like banter like that, and like, you know, everyone's into each other on there. But there was one that the same as I got told that he was 240, and it's like they're just sort of trying to quote you, and they're like going, and it just keeps growing and growing and growing. So it's
even when you say 240, I can't distinguish that between 240 and 214. That accent,
214.
It's a cool fucking accent, though. Right. Australian's a straight up cool accent. Australian and New Zealand, those are both very cool accents. Some accents are just ridiculous. They need to stop. But you got a cool accent.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
New Zealand's a dope place to be too, man. I want to go visit there. Just the beauty of it all, man. So green.
I love that type of stuff. I'm all about, you know, the landscapes and all that type of stuff. But I'm never actually in. Every time I'm in New Zealand, I'm in Auckland, in the city there, just training. That's it. So I never actually get to go see the place. I did for the last event where the boys fought in Auckland.
Dan Hooker, Paul Felder fight?
Yep. So I was there.
Great fight.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, that was unreal.
What a fight.
Yeah, man, that was good. Good fight, for sure. And I was there because I was at a wedding the night before. So, yeah, the night before, and that was like 5 hours north. So I had to drive 5 hours. Remember, in Australia and that, like the UFC's in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to get up like 3:30 in the morning and then drive all the way there to watch the fight. So while I was there for the wedding, I got to see a bit more, you know. I went fishing and stuff like that. So
beautiful.
I love all
trout
that.
Fishing in New Zealand.
Yeah. So
supposed to be some of the best in the world.
Yeah, some beautiful spots up there. So it was good. Good drive. At least it was a good drive on the way back.
The word
down.
Is in New Zealand, when it's really good, is during mice season.
Mice season?
Yes.
Okay.
Ready for this?
Yeah.
So something happens where there's more seeds, and when there's more seeds, there's more mice, and when there's more mice, the mice get into the water, and when the mice get into the water, the trout eat the mice, and so they catch these enormous trout that have just dozens of mice in their bellies.
Well,
yeah.
Mate, I mean, you know all these sort of like
I know weird
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, man.
I don't know why I know so much weird shit.
That's good though. It's good.
But I know a lot. This is actually a shout out to Jay Scott. This is listen to the Jay Scott Outdoors podcast where he was talking to. It's a hunting and fishing podcast where they were talking about. They were talking to a guy who's a guide in New Zealand.
Oh, okay.
And they were talking about, you know, like when's the best time to go over there. But they just have an enormous brown trout. Over in New Zealand.
Yeah, I've never done trout fishing, though. I've done a lot of fishing that, but I've never done, like, the freshwater fishing.
That's fun.
Yeah.
They do fly fishing, too, which is a little bit more skillful.
Okay, yeah that's difficult. I wouldn't mind giving that. I thought I could fish, Last time I went fishing, I went there and we would try to get kingies, and we had to, what do you call it? Like, when you're...
King salmon?
Yeah, like that. You've got to reel it in and like pull it up.
Man, oh,
I was
jigging.
Jigging.
Yeah.
I was useless at that. Like, I thought I'm pretty coordinated, but I just couldn't do it. Eh? I couldn't get it right. I don't know what it was, but I thought I could fish, but, you know, maybe little, you know, small fish and that I'm all right with. But the big fish, I need to work on that.
Well, it's a skill like anything else. I mean, fishing is, it's the guys who are really good at it. They're consistently good at it. It's not an accident.
Yeah. Well, I do a lot more spear fishing.
Do you?
Yes.
Yeah, so that looks fun.
Yeah, yeah. You know, again, like, as you know, like, underwater, it's just a whole other world.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's unreal. It really is. And I love it. So I go with a mate, and he's like a professional spear fisherman, and, you know, he's an abalone diver. He does all that. So he takes me to pretty crazy places, like in the middle of the ocean, just where there's a buoy, you know, like a, I don't know what you would call it here, just a, you know, a chain, and there's like a, you know, floaty buoy, we call them. And, they're just there, and then we'll go there, fish off there, and like go for like dolphin fish and stuff like that. And like, you literally just see a chain that goes down to, and it just disappears. It's pretty scary when you, you know what I mean? You're out there, and sometimes you're on your way and you'll see a shark on the way over there. And then you've got to jump in and you're like, far out.
Yeah, I've had friends that were hunters that got into spearfishing. They said it's basically like hunting, but you're hunting underwater. You know, and also the element of holding your breath.
Yeah, exactly.
And so there's an athletic element to it. And then the fucking predators underwater, they're way scarier than predators on land because you can't get away. Well, there's
exactly
not a goddamn
right.
thing you can do.
It's not our world, you know what I mean?
It's not our world at all.
It's unreal. So I get to watch him, like, you know, my mate Jack Lavender, a little shout out to him as well. So I get to go down there and watch. He can hold his breath for forever, like, you know, 5 minutes he'll be down there. Like, sometimes when it's murky, he'll go down and he'll just disappear. And then I start getting nervous. I'm like, oh, now I feel like I'm by myself, you know what I mean? And then you'll hear a shunk. So you'll hear that mean like,
oh,
here
yeah.
he'll go. And then he'll just come up. I'm like, where is he? And I'll see him come up like 100 meters away and stuff like that. But, you know, it's unreal. It really is. It's something that I think you should have.
I haven't done it. I need to get in there.
Yeah.
My friend Bert just got back. We've had Valentine Thomas on the podcast before, and she does it basically professionally.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. She's always spear fishing, and her whole Instagram, pull up her Instagram. Her Instagram is all like her spear. She was a lawyer. She was trained to be a lawyer in Montreal.
Okay.
And
yeah.
she was like, what the fuck am I doing? Like, I don't want to do this. So now, you know, against her family's wishes, she's out
spear
there
fishing,
jacking tuna and shit.
All right. Yeah. That's cool.
But yeah, her, this is,
oh, there you go.
Yeah. All of her, Instagram is all dedicated to her catching wild fish.
Oh, far out.
And she's hot.
She speared
that? Helps. Yeah. Looks like she did. Yeah.
Man, imagine trying to pull that.
Still got the fucking spear in it. Holy shit.
Yeah.
When did she get that?
Far out.
God damn. That's huge. Is that a swordfish or a marlin? That's a marlin, right?
It's like a marlin, yeah.
Yeah.
How does that even work, you know?
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, how just do you pull that fucker in?
Pull the trigger and then just lock your spear gun to the boat or something like that.
I mean, that's some serious line on that thing. How do you even get close to that? I caught one marlin once. It was a small marlin, and it was like 70 pounds, and it was so hard to pull in. It was it's kind of a fucked up story. It was with my oldest daughter, and she was, I want to say she was 12 at the time or 13, and she was a vegetarian because she loves animals. And I'm like, let's go catch a fish. It'll be great. You know, you'll catch a fish and you eat it. And because she had like started eating like a little bit of meat.
Yep.
So I take her. We catch a marlin 5 minutes into the trip. They pull it on board, beat it to death with a club right in front of her. She's like, oh, and it's big, right?
Oh,
like
far
the
out,
size
yeah.
of a dog, right? And they're beating this thing with clubs. You see the look on her poor face. She was like, oh.
Well, welcome back to
It didn't die quick either. It kept making noises.
Oh, no.
It would flop around every now and then. It would like come back to life a little bit and flop around. Like,
did she go back to vegetarian
no,
after that?
She eats meat. She eats meat. But it was a bit traumatic.
Yeah, I could imagine.
To put it lightly. Yeah. But I love fishing, man. It's just one of my favorite things to do. I love it.
Yeah, well, watch it because I get into I do a bit of hunting and stuff myself. So, I've watched Meat Eater, I've watched Meat Eater a couple of times. Yeah, that's cool.
Do you hunt in Australia?
Yeah.
Australia's a great place to hunt.
Yeah.
Shout out to my friend Adam Greentree.
Yeah. I've watched a bit of him,
That's his skull.
Oh, there you go.
Up there. That came from Australia.
All right. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Asiatic water buffalo.
Yeah.
Dangerous motherfuckers, those
things. They're big, far out. I've never done like that type. I've never been right up there.
He'll take you. Don't go.
Yeah,
if he offers, don't do it.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
He tries to drag me out there. There's nothing but mosquitoes. Mosquitoes and crocodiles. They drank water that they filtered out. It still tasted like buffalo piss.
Yeah.
Because the buffalo's pissing this water, and all you do is just filter it. I'm like, fuck you.
Well, actually, it's funny you say that, because I wanted to, you know, I gave you that kangaroo hat.
Yeah.
Was it there? Okay. There was a, oh, there we go. Thanks, cheers.
This episode is brought to you by Me Undies. For most of the year, fancy underwear technology sounds unnecessary. Breathable, quick dry, moisture wicking, anti-odor. It's a bit overkill, right? But then summer hits and the heat comes. Suddenly, all that sounds pretty damn essential. Be prepared for summer like me with Me Undies. So far, I love the items that I've gotten from them. They're all soft, comfortable, and flattering. I recommend it hands down, and don't worry, Me Undies has a cut for every guy with over 10 different styles, ranging from boxer briefs to jock straps to the new and improved ball caddy. Plus, they come in over 100 different colors and prints, ranging from black to all over sharks. No matter what pair you get, it'll have Me Undies' signature super soft micro modal fabric. It is amazing. So everything is breathable, stretchy, and oh so comfy. They also offer some of the most summer-proof fabric. So breathe. It's perfect for working out or just keeping you cool on those really hot days. And if you're not happy with your first pair of underwear, it's on Me Undies. Summer is coming. Be prepared with my favorite underwear, Me Undies. Comfort from the outside in. Get 20% off your first order, plus free shipping at MeUndies.com/Rogan. That's MeUndies.com/Rogan. Tap the banner to learn more. This episode is brought to you by SimpliSafe. Springtime is all about freshness. You got fresh air, fresh starts, freshly cleaned homes. And as you're getting your home in order, it might be a good time to take a fresh look at SimpliSafe Home Security. I think they're one of the best options out there, and so do a lot of others. SimpliSafe is loved by customers and experts alike. It was even named Best Home Security Systems of 2024 by U.S. News & World Report. And here's why I think you'll like it. The system blankets your whole home in protection. That includes advanced sensors and cameras to help detect break-ins, fires, floods, and more. Plus, with 24/7 professional monitoring, you can rest easy knowing you'll get a fast emergency response when you need it most. Monitoring agents can even help stop crime in real time. SimpliSafe has given many people a real peace of mind. I want you to have it too. So try it out risk-free with no contract and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Get 20% off your system today when you sign up for Fast Protect Monitoring at simplisafe.com/JRE. That's simplisafe.com/JRE. There's no safe like SimpliSafe.
Is there a right way to wear it? I think this part's on front, right?
Yeah, I'd say so. I don't know, actually.
Come on, how good does that look?
There you go. Fits
I belong
well.
Over there.
That's all.
Fit right in. If I didn't live in North America, Australia's where I'd live.
Yeah?
Yeah. I love it there. I don't go there very much because the fucking flight's too long.
Oh, right. Yeah,
we need to fix that.
So, how do we fix that? So, what was I say? I was going to actually get you. They even had like crocodile belts and that stuff like that. But I wanted to actually get you a knife, a custom made one with like, and I was going to get like maybe crocodile skin, but I just ran out of time.
Well, thank you
next
for the
time,
hat.
Next time.
Hey, thank you very much for the hat. No, look at all these fucking crocodiles.
Oh, shit. I watched that. Shit? Actually, watched that video.
Yeah, look at this.
Man.
Fuck you,
where is
Adam
that?
Green Tree. This is probably in Australia.
Oh, shit. They're the Everglades. I don't know, but.
What?
I mean, I couldn't find
no,
out.
No, those are crocodiles, bro. That's not alligators. If you look at their snouts, they're long and thin. Crocodiles have a long, thin snout, whereas alligators have like a blunt snout. I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't think I am.
I only said that.
Yeah, those are crocodiles,
and
bro.
The fact where you could be going past little ponds, or not even just a little puddle, and there'll be a big croc laying in it and stuff like that. It's
this
just
is
a
so ridiculous. That's so ridiculous.
Yeah, it's scary.
Yeah.
Hold my beer while I go for a boat ride.
So many. It's so many. I mean, that's insane. That doesn't even make sense. I don't know where that is. Maybe that's Africa. But if it's Australia, fuck you, Adam Greentree.
Yeah, man, I don't think I could do that. The snakes and all that. When I was younger, I used to be pretty wild, you know what I mean? Like, I'll do anything. You know, I'm not one, get me on a snowboard, I'll try a backflip off a cliff and, you know, cliff jumping and all. I'll do it all. Like, I was a silly. But now that, obviously, I can't afford to get injured and having kids that are really really does throw you off doing some of that sort of stuff. So now I'll be way too scared up there. I wouldn't be able to do
you
it.
You shouldn't. We need you. You're very important. You're very important. So your position now where you are the UFC champion, what is next? Is it a rematch with Max Holloway?
Look, right now we don't really have anything locked in. Obviously, I think they were waiting for clearances and stuff like that.
But is the hand clear now?
Yeah. So I've been.
How many months ago was the fight now?
When was that? It was December 15th. So yeah, a few months. So it's a. I just had like my first like wrestling sessions and grappling sessions. It held up well. So I told my doc that, and you know he's happy to. They're more than happy for the June. Obviously, there's a perf card in June. Ooh. And yeah, so that's something that you know.
Do you have a pin in there or anything?
I've got a couple of screws. Yeah, so I've got a couple of screws in there, but. And done a bit of a ligament damage as well. We don't know if that was before the fight or during the fight. But, you know, again, I'm back into training and you know, it doesn't take me long to get fit. And I try to do, again, I'm professional. I try to keep training. But nothing's locked in. Nothing's locked in. We haven't even really had that conversation yet. But all, you know, everything's pointing to, you know, Perf and even Max being the rematch. You know, a lot, that's what Dana White keeps bringing up. But we haven't had that conversation. I think for the division and for me, I think that probably is still the biggest fight.
It's a big fight.
Yeah, you got what I mean?
It's a big fight, and there's nothing else that makes sense in the horizon.
That's the thing. You know what I mean? We've got so many.
Ortega is going to fight Korean Zombie, and I don't know what the fuck happened this weekend. Were you there when he smacked Jay Park?
I just missed that. So I knew that could have happened because Korean Zombie done the interview, like where they had the translator, where all that sort of happened, I was like watching it, so I knew what happened, and Ortega said that he was going to slap him. Like, he actually said this. He was going, "I'm going to slap you when I see you," or something like that.
Why was he saying that?
Because Jay Park was translating for Korean Zombie, and supposedly he said things that, insulted Ortega, and Ortega didn't like it, so he said he was going to...
But did he say things, or did he translate things?
That's what a lot of people are saying, but I think... He didn't translate fully, and then he just sort of had his opinion as well. So I think Jay Park might have just said that he was ducking Zombie when he got injured. How they were meant to fight, and that happened. So I think he said that himself, as in, I don't know. It was weird. So I was away though. So I wasn't away. I was backstage with Izzy. So we go out there and watch the boys, and then we all huddle up and do our thing, and then I went back, and then it just happened. So it was a. Joe, my coach, ends up telling me, he's like, there was a fight just there. And he didn't really know who it was. And then I got told by a couple of people. And then I'm like, oh, man, I bet you it was that Jay Park, because I didn't know he was there.
You can't do that.
Yeah, I know.
You can't smack. He's a tiny little guy, too. You can't smack that guy. Yeah. Even if you want to. I mean, if you want to point at him and get in his face and make him nervous, that's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
But you're a goddamn professional killer.
Yeah, exactly right.
I mean, Brian Ortega's a killer. Mm. Can't be smacking some guy who's a rapper.
Yeah, that's it. If he wanted to get that fight again, I think it worked because the Zombies...
Well, he was getting that fight again anyway, wasn't he? Wasn't it scheduled?
I don't know if that was. I don't know if that... Because it was scheduled and then it didn't happen.
Ortega's gone through a series of pretty significant injuries. Mm. They just keep happening to him.
I heard the... Him and Zabit as well. I don't know if that's happened, so I don't know. But they might.
That is what I heard. Mm. That's right. You're right. It was Calvin Kattar, Jeremy Stephens, and Zabit and Ortega. Right?
Okay,
those are the things that I heard. But after Chan Sung Jung knocked out Frankie Edgar, who knows? Mm. I mean, maybe they would make that fight now. But I don't want to reward people for smacking people. You know what I mean? I mean, they shouldn't make a fight just because he smacked Jay Park.
Yeah, I'm hearing you. So that's, again, like when you're talking about the division and like what's next for me, while I was injured, I thought there's so many people that are probably one fight away from a title shot, I believe, you know what I mean? You've got your Ortegas, Zabit, Korean Zombie, I think any of them fight each other and win, I think they're clear number one. I think, obviously people are going to always say, Max deserves that immediate rematch. And things like that, and I understand that. But, I mean, I think they could have had a case there to actually, but no one did anything. So right now, I'm not going to wait around, especially when there's an Aussie card, I think they've been talking to Max. I don't even know. Again, we haven't even had that conversation. I just do my thing. I let my team do theirs, and I just do my thing, but nothing's happened yet.
It's a hot division. Mm. I mean, that division is hot. Calvin Kattar, who's another guy who's on the up. That's a dangerous guy. There's so much talent in that division.
Yep.
It's an amazing division, really.
Yeah.
145 is one of the, if you look at it, stacked divisions, one of the most stacked divisions in the sport.
Yeah, I think so. I think so for sure. So a lot of killers in there, and now they all got their eyes on me. So, yeah.
Well, I was so impressed with the fight you fought against Max, because to fight your style for five rounds, you have to be in tremendous shape, because you have such an explosive style. Your style is so movement, leg kick heavy, and then power shots. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're throwing so many power punches, like just your sheer output, and you're not touching people. You're smashing, you know what I mean? It's like it's a very difficult style to maintain for five rounds.
Yeah, well, it is. But, you know, again, I've always been a hard worker, and we train hard. We definitely train.
Imagine.
Yeah, and we all put in our – I don't know if you've ever – we call a workout, we do the spot, we call it Spider. It was named after someone, but yeah, Spider. So it's just literally fight gone bad, and it's just the hardest, whatever you're fighting. If it's a three rounder, you'll do the three rounds. If it's a five round, you do the five rounders. It's like the hardest 5 minute rounds that you can think of, and like they just put you versus everyone. Like the atmosphere is absolutely crazy, and like if you just seen the workout, you'll be like, wow, you know, that explains why he's fit. You know what I mean? It's crazy, it really is. So we put the hard yards in, and you know, obviously to have a style like that, like you said, you know, you got to put the work in. But again, as you were saying, like, you know, obviously they're not just touching, like there's a lot of big shots, but you know, I always try and break the rhythm. So a lot of times I am, you know, there will be a couple touch and then couple send and right through, and I just try and mix it up really well. And I think that worked really well with Max. Obviously it gets real deep, but I won't get there might be a rematch, so I can't give too much away.
Right. You know? you could give away this. What was the game plan coming into that fight? And was anything unusual for you? Like when you actually wound up fighting Max, was there anything, once you were actually in the octagon with him, was there anything unusual?
Not, like everything pretty much went to how we thought it was going to go. So he made adjustments during that fight. We both were adjusting. So, you know, I don't know if many people would have seen it, but even when it come to just the way, like, you know, I would go and then he'll try and counter, and then he would be like, pretend to counter, then pull back, then counter, you know what I mean? We're sort of just having these little battles. But always leg kicks were going to be a big part, not just to hurt his leg, but just to really break his rhythm and, you know, and make him, you know, obviously he loves that jab. And he stays pretty heavy on that front leg.
Yes.
And whether that's, you know, making him adjust, you know, his stance and just putting him in a position that he's not comfortable with. And he's been fighting forever in this style, and it's been so effective for him. So, you know, him even being a couple of inches back, you know, so he's not so heavy on that front leg, that just throws his whole rhythm up. You know what I mean? And that's why a lot of people, it's funny, a lot of people are going to go, oh, he's going to make adjustments and he's going to check the kicks and all that. But you've got to remember, he's a volume fighter. If he starts adjusting so much, you know what I mean, starts worrying about all that, then he can't stick to a game that's been so successful for himself. So I don't know. I'm expecting the same thing. I'm expecting to go out there and do my thing. But again, we'll mix it up, but I can't give too much away.
Right. You saw some adjustments where he switched to southpaw. Did you guys anticipate that as well?
Yeah. We anticipated that, yeah. So that was, again, like you're going to hit, you know, smack the leg that many times, I'm sure, you know.
Yeah.
But again, it was just... Even though, you know, he does switch stances a lot, so we were ready for that. But, I mean, for him to actually do the whole round in southpaw, I think that was a third round or later in the second he sort of switched. But in the third, he was like southpaw for a while, and that's when, you know, it was probably my biggest round. That's where he copped a lot. So then he tried to come back to orthodox. But, you know, I just, again, I'm so good at playing what's in front of me. So he did make adjustments, and I adjusted again. And it's just, again, I think that goes back to training with so many different bodies and styles, and you know what I mean? No surprises come fight time. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, you mean you guys have a crazy, crazy team. If you really stop and think about it, you know, Dan Hooker, Israel Adesanya, and you just alone, and I'm sure you guys got a bunch of killers coming up, right?
Man, I'm telling you, there's some guys you go there and you train, and there's guys that do it as a hobby. They just train there as a hobby, and they could be in the UFC.
I'm sure.
It's a blowout. Like,
there's always guys like that.
Yeah,
there's always
exactly
those guys
right.
in gyms.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like in jiu-jitsu, there's always a guy like, why aren't you competing?
Yeah.
You know, like you roll with them and they're like elite black belts. There's always these guys that just really love it, but they don't feel like doing it for a living.
Yeah, man, it's a blowout. Like, again, I've trained with a lot of people, and then I'll go there and I'll have this guy that hasn't even had an amateur fight and he's giving me problems. Mm. And you're like, what's going on here? You know
that's
what I mean?
Crazy.
But it's cool. Again,
but
that's what
makes
want.
A great gym, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not just the main stars. It's all the supporting talent that you have in the gym as well.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's, again, you know, no one's, you know, even in our gym, you know, we've got a couple of guys, even amateurs that fight, you know, we're all treated the same, you know what I mean? When it's fight time, if they're doing that spider workout, everyone's here, you know, even when you're at City Kickboxing or at our gym, like, you know, the champions will still be there supporting the other guys that are doing their spider, you know what I mean? So everyone's, it's just one big family sort of feel. And like, again, we're obviously at a freestyle fighting gym, but we've been welcomed as a part of the family in it. And it, that, I think that's a big, big part of, you know, why they're so successful as well. Just that sort of team camaraderie, you know what I mean?
It's for sure, yeah.
Yeah, man.
When you see it when one of you guys fights, everyone's there to support. It's a big factor.
Yeah, definitely. So, again, you know, I mean, I just think it, you know, obviously it's working well. We're doing good things. And I think they're 4-0 Kickboxers are 4-0 at the moment. And we'll just keep getting them wins up.
What did you think about Adesanya versus Yoel Romero?
Yeah, it's a tricky one, you know what I mean? So obviously a lot of people are knocking it, and obviously it wasn't the most, wasn't so many exchanges and stuff like that. But I guess you've got to look at it, why that happened. And I think Yoel, you know, obviously was just standing there waiting for Izzy to come in. Every time, you know, Izzy did commit to something, he just come out. Like, he literally was going to wait till you come in and I'm just going to throw bombs.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously Izzy knows that. So he's trying to touch him, trying to get him to react, and you know, waiting for him to explode and things that just didn't happen. So it's just a tricky one, man. That's why a lot of people are going to say whatever, but you're never in there. You don't really know what it feels like to you're actually in there. And someone like Romero, he can take your head off like that. You know what I mean? So
yeah, I didn't like the criticism of it. Yeah. There's not much else Adesanya could have done. Mm-hmm. And Yoel, like, I mean, I guess he's selling that Izzy didn't do anything, that he wouldn't fight him man to man, but that's not true.
Yeah,
because he didn't come forward.
Yeah,
like he's selling as if he was chasing Izzy and Izzy wasn't doing anything, but that's not what happened. Like,
exactly,
Izzy was
right,
trying to get him to engage, and he didn't want to engage. He was literally standing there at the beginning of the fight, standing still, which is kind of crazy.
It was that was like a solid minute or something or more.
Standing still, and then he would switch stances a little bit. Choop choop.
Yep.
Stand still. Choop choop.
A couple little.
But he's lulling you to sleep, and you saw that when he did land a couple good left hands.
Yep.
When Izzy did try to connect, when he did try to get close, bought into it a little bit, and Yoel threw that fucking left hand. It's crazy how fast that guy is.
Yeah, man. So again, like, you know, when you're just, you can sense that as soon as I do commit to anything, he's just going to come guns blazing.
Yeah.
So obviously, you know, fair enough. Obviously, there's going to be a lot more opportunities if he started trying to do stuff as well. But the fact that he'd done nothing till he was just ready to explode, it makes things how it is, you know what I mean?
Well,
again, if you
want
to fight smart, if you're trying to fight smart as well, you know.
And
what
he
I mean?
Should fight smart, and I think he did fight smart. I think he did. I mean, this is what fighting is all about. Some fights, like Zhang Weili and Yoni Ondrejcik, is super, super exciting. But that's styles. Those styles matched up.
Yep.
I mean, not every fight is super exciting. Robert Whittaker fought Yoel in a very exciting way, but, I mean, that's a bad way to fight with that guy.
Yeah.
Yoel's a fucking beast, man.
Even just hitting him, like, even like I reckon he's throwing the leg kicks. No, obviously that would have been hurting Romero, but it's probably hurting yourself kicking him, you know what I mean? He's just solid rock.
He's a solid
dude. You could imagine throwing stuff and hitting just a brick.
Well, that's what Rockhold said. He said every time he hit him, it hurt him.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Man, it's just
he's a freak, man. And the fact that he's 42, it's like, what in the fuck, man?
Crazy.
Yeah.
Absolutely crazy.
I really felt like that was how Izzy had to fight him. I really didn't think that he could fight him any other way. I mean, I expected that. Use his length, use his reach, use his attributes, stay on the outside, he's a higher level kickboxer.
Mm-hmm.
Use that, you know, and try to lure him into, you know, attacking and counter those attacks. But it's one of those things where it's like, if you see, like, when Tyron Woodley fought Wonderboy, kind of the same thing. A lot of people were saying, oh, those are boring fights. Well, that's how you have to fight that guy.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how you fight him.
And
you wait on him.
And you got to remember, you know what I mean? Like, obviously, oh, let's just go out there and let's just be, you know, really exciting. But you lose, everyone forgets about you.
Everyone forgets about you.
You know what I mean? So you got to have that sort of, especially if you're champion, you got to fight the fight that's going to get you to win.
And you only have so many holes that can get punched in your card, right? Those those punch holes are valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And you let yourself get cracked when you didn't have to. There's no need for that.
Yeah.
You should always fight smart. It's dangerous enough to fight smart.
Hit and not get hit, you know? Like, that's such a, you know, that's how I believe as well. You know, that's why.
It's just styles. It's just styles. The way styles match up. Like, here's another example. Paulo Costa. Paulo Costa and him, that stylistically is going to be fucking crazy. Because that guy fought Romero the way Romero wanted someone to fight him. And he still fucked him up.
Yeah.
Didn't fuck him up. I shouldn't say that. He still won. Mm-hmm. And even whether or not he won was, you know, close.
Yeah.
It was close. Very close fight. Yeah, some people saw it the other way. But, I mean, he hit Romero with everything but the kitchen sink. Mm. There's a picture that I put on my Instagram of him head-kicking Romero. I mean, it's
I remember that photo, clean. Yeah, man.
And Costa's a knockout artist, and he's shinning him right upside the head. And, like...
Doesn't even budge.
It's not even moving.
Yeah.
Well, Romero has a huge scar down the back of his neck. And I think his neck is fused. And I think that's part of one of the reasons why he kind of moves funny.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Like, look at this. Look at this photo.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, bro. Clean.
It even looks like he's went into that as well.
Oh, I mean, it looks like he's ducking into it. He's catching it right in the face, and nothing happened.
That's a big dude kicking you in the head, too.
His neck. There's a big scar. It's really big. I've never seen a neck surgery scar that's that large. And it's he said he almost died. You know, he said he had some sort of serious neck injury. And, you know, I mean, when you're a silver medalist in the Olympics in the Cuban national team, the fucking wrestling practices those guys must have, and the wrestling actual matches that he's had, I'm sure the wear and tear on the body is unbelievable.
Oh, 100%. But I reckon it's one of, like, wrestling's got to be one of the hardest sports.
It's one of the hardest.
Man, by far, like, you know, you obviously doing MMA, you got to do a lot of wrestling, and just seeing them scramble, like, there's nothing like a scramble, and just see the scrambles they have to train for.
Yes.
Like, imagine the training you got to do to be able to just do a 2-minute scramble or something like that. It's just, man, it's crazy.
Yeah, and the test of wills. I mean, and they relish in being uncomfortable, you know, in a lot of ways.
Well, exactly right.
They enjoy it. They like being really fucked up and uncomfortable.
Well, that's a big part of how, you know, you've got to be comfortable when things get uncomfortable. You know, I could have worded that better, but that's something that I'm all about. You know, I put myself in uncomfortable positions in the gym, you know, day in, day out, or, you know, obviously, obviously you're going to have structure to how you train in a week, but I put myself there, and then, you know, how do you adapt to that? How do you, you know, how do you sort of go from there? So that's what, again, with that spider workout, that's what you're meant to do. You are going to go to breaking point.
Right.
Like, we put you there, and I'll be in that position, but are you going to shy away from it, or are you just going to get up and just do whatever you can? Yeah, it might not be the best because you literally can't move.
Right.
But it's how do you adapt to that sort of position of being in such an uncomfortable position. So, you know, if it gets there that, you know, you're always going to be able to at least push yourself, at least get you to that whatever you need to do to win.
That's where a great team and a great coach comes in handy. That's where it really comes into play, because a fighter, you know, especially some fighters, they want to be the hammer all the time. They don't want to be the nail.
Yep.
They want to be dominating in practice. They don't want to feel like, you know, they're getting smothered and swarmed, and they don't want to fuck with their confidence. But you have to trust in that process. You have to. And there's many, many fighters who don't. They train with guys who are not as good as them, and everything goes great until it doesn't go great.
Yep.
And then they're not used to that position.
Exactly right. So I think I've always done that. I've always been, even from the first day of doing MMA, you know what I mean? I'm the type of person, when you're always doing that, when you're always, like, putting yourself in uncomfortable positions, and then, you know, you always got to figure ways out. Yeah. So if I'm versing heavyweights, because that's the type of guy, I'll train with heavyweights, and you'll be losing, but, you know, you can just sit there and accept that, oh, I'm going to find a way to get up. And you're constantly doing that over the 10 years you're training. You know, that's where a lot of people are like, you know, how are you so fit and all that sort of stuff? I think it's just through so many years of putting myself in uncomfortable positions that when training does get tough, I'm still going to go. I'm still going to push myself. You know what I mean? I'm not going to shy away from it, and it'll make me, you know, who I am today.
Yeah, I mean, I just think there's such a value in being able to deal with uncomfortable positions.
Yeah,
and that's, I mean, there's a lot of really talented, really, really good guys who don't do that. I think if the shit gets ugly, you're used to it.
Well, you see it. You see it in a lot of fights where people obviously get uncomfortable and they just, it goes downhill for them.
Yeah. You see people mentally break.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's such a crazy sport, man.
Yeah, it definitely is a crazy
sport. Do you have a mental coach?
I don't. I actually don't have a mental coach. I think it's something that I could definitely invest in and look into, because again, this is, as they say, you know, there's so much mental in this, and it really is physically and mentally draining. So it's a, but I think I'm really good in them situations, to be quite honest. You know what I mean? Like, but obviously I can be better.
Right.
But like, I don't get like nervous before fights at all. I get more nervous when my teammates are fighting and all that. I'll get nervous. Yeah, but when I'm fighting, I'm me. I really am. I'm sweet. I'm having a laugh. I'm, you know, with the coaches and the boys. And, you know, we even have like people that work with the UFC and be like, with my Max fight, and they're like, you realize you're about to fight for a world title? I'm like, yeah, all good. Like, you know what I mean? That's just how I am. I'm pretty chill in their positions. It was an actual funny story. Oh, not really funny, but it was cool. It was something that he actually mentioned. It was Bisping. So I ended up doing had a chat with him, and I had pink headphones. So that's like I had to wear them like when I'd done like an interview with him. And so while I was there waiting to walk out, he needed to go to the toilet in between, you know, a break in between the fights. And he stopped and he was like, oh, well, I felt a bit awkward because he's thinking, oh, I'm ruining this guy's mojo. He's about to, you know, walk out. And I'm like, oh, you're all good. Go to the toilet. And he starts going and they're still trying to stay out of my way. I'm like, oh, pink headphones. I'm just having a little laugh. And he just had a laugh back. And I remember on his podcast, he was talking about how, you know, like just the fact that I was able to be so chill in, I'm about to walk out for my title fight. And that's just who I am. Like, that's, you know, I just adapt to every situation. I feel like I'm pretty good in these situations. That's why I don't know if I need one, but I think I should still invest in one.
It's probably a good idea just to have one, just to take it to another level.
Exactly right.
You know what I mean?
Exactly right. I think you can, because I feel like I can do all right, but maybe there's so many things that we don't know, yeah, and I think that that could help a lot, you know. So I'll look into that.
Look into it.
I'll look into it.
Will you like that? Look at his shirt. I looked into it.
Oh, look at that. Yes, yeah. I did that on purpose.
Were you like that in your first couple of fights?
Nah, I wouldn't say I was, you know, I think it, again, like when I was fighting, I always try and keep myself level. You know, I'm always doing that no matter whether I'm going in the interviews or whatever it is, you know, say if I'm about a fight, I'm just like, relax, don't let it, like, you know, don't let it take over you, you know, the nerves or whatever it is, or the anger or what, you know, some people get hyped up. I don't want to get, I want to be level-headed. I've got a game plan to stick to, so I've always done that. And because I've always done that in my fights and in all situations, I really am, like, level, like, when I fight. So sometimes it was hard for me to realize I won a world title because I'm so used to keeping myself so composed that it was like it didn't happen. I won the world title. I was like, there's a video of me backstage, and I'm, like, looking at the ball. I'm, like, far out. Like, it's, you know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? I'm going, I even say something like that. I'm, like, going, you're the fucking champ. Like, wake up. You know what I mean? Like, it's
be
crazy.
Excited.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, I'm just sitting there still walking around just like, you know, nothing happens. Like,
that's probably a good way to be.
It is. It does help me in my fights. It really does. And that's how you can stick to a game plan when you're so composed and level-headed in there. So I believe it works. It works for me. But, yeah, again, I wish I could be more excited about being a champ, though.
Maybe it's not a bad thing. I mean, maybe it's great to keep this mindset throughout your entire career.
Yeah,
for
sure.
Maybe when you retire, you can go, holy fuck, what did I do?
Yeah. like the Vegas trip, that's what it was. I was like, what the hell did I do the last couple of days?
That's a little different.
Yeah.
So you say you hunt. Do you, is it wild game? Is that a part of your diet? Is that a big part of your diet?
Yeah. Obviously, you know, I like to eat that. I love all that type of stuff. And I've done it from a young age, like with my dad. Like, so we used to, you know, even go like hunting like for goat and like pigs and stuff like that. And, you know, we'll even get the spit going like while we're over there. Like, we have to turn it with our hands because we didn't, like full, like
old
all
school.
Taken. Yeah. So, yeah, man, to be honest, when I'm in camp, I can't get out there and stuff like that. But I'm all for it. I love it. I love it. That's why I watch a lot of you and always see you with your gaming meats and all that. And I love that. I love that type of stuff.
Oh, it's my favorite food. Mm. I love it.
What's your favorite meat?
Elk.
Elk, yeah. Is that I've never got to taste any of them.
I wish you were around, I'd give you some. I mean, if you were in town, I'd give you some if you could cook it.
Well, sometimes we go when I fight in America, there's a lot of places that will have this type of stuff, but I'm always in fight camp.
You know what's hilarious?
Fight week.
If you get it, if you're an American, you get it at a restaurant, it comes from New Zealand.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Isn't that nuts?
That's crazy.
Yeah, because they
try
farm
it. Here,
it.
Yeah.
They farm it. Like, you can't sell wild game in America. You can't sell
it.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why it almost went extinct. Elk, deer, all these animals almost went extinct at the turn of the century, the 20th century. because they did what's called market hunting. When there was no refrigerators back then, they just shot everything and just served it to people. And they didn't think about conservation at all. So they got white-tailed deer down to like a really low number. Elk were down to a really not. I mean, they extirpated it from many, many states where it used to be a game animal in many, many states. It's not. Yeah. It's not there anymore.
Far out.
I think it's something crazy. Like it's only in 10 to 20% of its native range where it used to be. But it's they're very healthy populations in those states now. Colorado's very healthy. Montana, Wyoming, Idaho, mm-hmm. Utah is where I go every year. It's a delicious meat though.
Yeah, that's someone Idaho. That Boise's in Idaho, isn't it? Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I fought there and I wanted to like go and explore, like because I knew it was a lot of big hunting over there. So I was like, I want to at least go for a drive and see if I could see any like in a deer or elk or whatever it was, but I didn't get a chance to do that.
I was got grizzlies.
Oh, grizzlies?
Big.
Oh, I'll stay in the car if I was going to do that.
Big bears.
Yeah.
Idaho's got bears. I have friends that hunt in Idaho and they get real nervous when they shoot something. Oh, okay. Because they have wolves too. Wolves and grizzlies.
Oh, like didn't think of that.
Yeah, if you shoot, and Wyoming does as well, if you shoot an elk, and so does Montana, but if you shoot an elk in any of those states that have grizzlies, it's very dangerous because usually it takes a couple trips to pack it out.
Okay,
so,
yeah.
Like, if you shoot an elk is, you know, probably 800-900 pounds.
Oh, yeah.
And you're not going to carry it all out. It's like you and your friend, if you pack it out, unless you have some four-wheel drive, a vehicle that can get back to it, or you have horses. A lot of times they use horses. Hunters use horses to pack out meat. Like they'll have a whole train of horses, like 5 or 6 horses, and they'll take the pack, you know, put all the meat, distribute it evenly on the horses, and get out of there in one trip.
Yeah.
Because if not, then you got to go back.
That's a lot of meat scent rolling around. So.
You got to hope that motherfucker doesn't smell it. Because if they smell it, they claim it. I have a buddy of mine who killed an elk, and they came back to the carcass, and it was buried.
Oh, really?
Fucking that happened to Adam Greentree. That had him happen. Didn't he say that on his, I think he saved it on his Instagram page. He shot an elk. I want to say.
It was buried?
Yes. A grizzly came and buried it.
So that's what they do. They dig a hole and they bury
it. They decide it's theirs.
Oh, shit.
Well, for them, digging a hole ain't shit.
Yeah, okay.
It's like us crumpling up a piece of paper. Yeah. They just covered this fucking elk carcass. Here it is.
All right.
Where was he at? Does it say? Give me some volume on this.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a moose. Oh, this is Alaska.
Okay.
So, I don't
like yeah.
It's a blowout, man.
Yeah. Hey. Refresh this so we can hear all the words.
Is it a good idea to go back there now that you know it's been back?
No, it's a terrible idea.
He buried the whole moose.
Far out.
The whole moose is buried.
Is that your moose under there?
Yeah, that's my moose under there.
Buried.
Yeah.
Mate, I'll be shitting myself right now.
Oh, mate.
Okay. I don't like this.
You hear the other guy? I don't like this.
Mm.
See, the other problem is that grass. Look at the grass. That grass is like 5 feet high. You can't even see the motherfucker if it's coming.
Yeah.
That's what's scary. That thing could have been 30 yards away, just watching them walk up on the shit.
It's a pretty shitty position you're in right
so
now.
So he got most of the meat out of there, but the bear had taken some of it. But they had to dig it up and...
Far out.
Yeah.
Mate, that's scary.
Oh, so scary.
You know, I mean, at least, even crocodiles, at least you sort of know to sort of stay away from the water or something.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, that's the problem is it had decided that moose was his.
Yeah.
You know?
And they're all over.
Yeah, they're all over. It's a big fucking animal, man. Is that another video? Is it two videos? What's the second? Them trying to get it out of there?
Man, I would have already been gone. We just take the antlers and just go.
Oh, you want that meat, though. Your party's like, fuck.
Moose under here, all the cut-up meat that we've got.
Oh, well, so they... Oh, I get you. So they've already cut it all up and had it in bags.
So this is what I was saying.
Okay.
Like, they cut it up and they were carrying it out one step at a time. So,
oh, right, yeah.
So say if you and I shot a moose and we were out there, you know, we both put like 100 pounds on our back and we'd hike out.
And everything and would be... All the meat would be... Trips. Yeah. All the meat would be already packed up and stuff.
Yes.
Okay, I thought that would take
so
a bit.
So they put it in these game bags. And then they let it sit there.
I've seen that a bit on Meat Eater.
Yeah, so. Exactly. So when they went back, it had all been buried.
Okay. Oh, mate, it's a scary situation to be in.
Yeah.
Mate, obviously, we got you know, a lot of snakes and all that. So that's why a lot of people like going, you know, fuck Australia, you go there. You, it's weird. Like, you literally, you know, there are a lot of snakes and spiders and stuff like that. But, you know, I've had even that mate that I talked to you about, the spear fisherman. He's just like, man, he's like a Steve Irwin. Like, he's just, you know, in everything. Everything he does, I've seen him, like, run. He was on, like, a swing, jumped off, and then realized that was a octopus in the water, just goes there, jumps in, dives in somehow, like, just don't even know how you catch it, goes in, boom, pulls this big octopus out. And just situations like that, man, I've seen him even other times we're walking, you see a lizard jump in the water, he's just dived in, like, his head and arm goes in, boom, pulls out this big lizard. Just, you know, there's just crazy things
just
like that.
He's connected to the wildlife.
So then, you know, obviously with snakes and all that sort of stuff, and he's catching the snakes. And
octopus will fuck you up too, man. They have that beak.
They scare me, man. Yeah. They scare me, yeah. Well, they even just, them sticking to you, I feel like.
Plus, they're smart as shit.
Yeah.
They're real smart. Man.
I've seen some mad videos of them.
But like, they only live like a couple of years. I think an octopus's life. How long, Jamie Shiganson?
It's like max 2 years. Maybe 2 years. Average about a year, maybe average two. That's what we looked up. We've looked it up a couple times.
That's why they don't take over the world.
Man.
Because they're like 2-year-old babies. But they're fucking smart as shit, man. They figure out how to open up jars and shit. They can spin jars.
I've watched them videos. And when they obviously know their size, so they put a tentacle through. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, yeah, I can fit through that. It's like this.
Yeah.
And the big octopus like that. And
they compress.
As long as the beak can go through, the whole body can go through.
Yeah.
And you watch them do that and you're like, what? Like, crazy.
3 to 5, it says giant Pacific octopus.
Giant octopus, 3 to 5 years, and then die of old age.
Small octopus
and
is scary.
They're
enough.
Delicious.
Yes, so they are.
I used to feel bad that I was eating them, but then I found out they only live 5 years. I'm like, what am I cutting a year out of your life? What is this shit? You know?
Yeah. So I've seen, in the wild in Australia, we've seen some pretty crazy things. We've got some, as you know, like the hunting stories are always some crazy stories.
Well, you have a crazy place too, because so much of your wildlife is invasive. So much of your wildlife has been introduced because the people that put your ancestors there, they decided they were trying to turn that place into some wild hunting habitat. So they brought over stags and red deer and all these animals that thrive over there.
Yeah.
They're all invasive species.
Yeah, man. Well, we got, the deer, they're everywhere now. Like, so where I live is on like the beach coastline there, and like we've got mountains, and they're just deer everywhere. Like, they just walk in people's yards and stuff like that. And I've seen the photos of them on the beaches and stuff like that. Just, where people are.
It's good
are.
If you need meat.
Exactly.
Like my friend Adam, I mean, all he eats is wild game, and he you can hunt in so many different places over there.
Mm. Yeah, for sure.
And they treat them like a red deer over there is like a rodent or a pest.
Oh, right, yeah. Well,
so many of them.
That's what I mean. The deers, especially where we are, they're thousands of them, or millions of them.
Yeah.
They're just everywhere. Everywhere. You go there and just any open paddock in the afternoon, and you'll see like herds of them.
New Zealand's the same way, right?
New Zealand, I think so.
They brought in all those animals and just left them there, and now there's no predators.
Yeah.
Luckily, there's no predators, but they did fuck up in Australia and bring over some predators. They brought over cats. And
all right.
Wild cats in Australia are a big problem. They kill everything. They've devastated ground nesting birds and all sorts of different wildlife. And it's one of the weirder things about bow hunting in Australia is that they'll hold up cats like something they killed.
Okay.
So they'll take a house cat.
Okay,
and they're like holding up a house cat and smile like, look, I got him.
Yeah.
And they're like, what the fuck? The same way people would hear with a coyote.
Like, okay, yeah.
Hunters kill as many coyotes as they can over here because coyotes kill fucking cats and dogs, and they kill chickens, and they've killed all my fucking chickens.
Oh, really?
I had a bunch of chickens. They killed 9 of them at one time.
Oh, shit.
I've had them a bunch. They killed them slowly, and then they got them all at once. We had a fire out here, and the fire burnt down my chicken coop, so I had to put them in a smaller chicken coop.
Okay.
And the coyotes tore open the chicken coop and killed my 9 remaining chickens all in one night.
So pretty
fucking
bad pests.
Feathers everywhere. Over here. Oh, they're monsters.
Mm.
They're clever. They're really interesting animals.
Okay,
I mean, part of me admires them because they're really smart little fuckers. They're really smart. And they're sneaky. Like, they'll trick a dog into chasing after them, and then a couple other coyotes will be waiting, and they'll jump the dog and kill it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Far out.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
What is this here? Australia's deadly serious about killing millions of cats. See? Look at that guy holding a fucking cat.
Yeah, there's plenty of them there.
Yeah. Feral felines are driving the country's native species to extinction. Now a massive culling is underway to preserve what's left of the wild. Someone who didn't understand wildlife introduced cats there to deal with other small animals.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think they had brought They brought something else over there that was causing problems. I think rabbits. I think that's what it was. I think they brought rabbits over there, and the rabbits were fucking everything up. So, like, what can we do? Rabbits are eating all this vegetables. Oh, we'll bring cats. They'll all fix it. And they just created a mess. So they're trying. They literally would like all wild cats to be extinct.
All right. Yeah, you do see a fair bit of them out there.
Yeah. Well, cats in America kill billions with a B, billions of birds and mammals every year.
Yeah.
Every year they kill billions of birds and mammals.
So that's why I know a lot of the farmers and that, they obviously can't, you know, even my mate, like, is he just, you know, they kill so many native birds and all that sort of stuff, and that's why he's not a big fan of them. But it's just, again, like, it's bloody, they're crazy. Some of them get big as well. I've seen photos of, like, they look like a house cat, but then they're just like
huge.
Yeah, they're holding them like this and they're almost touching the ground. You're like, what?
Yeah.
That's a blowout.
Like, eating good.
And I've seen some ones that were black, so they look like a panther or something. Like, well, like, it's a panther. I was like, no, it's just a cat. It's all far out.
28-pound house cat.
It says the number fluctuates from between 2 to 6 million depending on the weather.
Amount of cats in Australia?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
And they're dropping poison sausage out of the air to kill
To kill the cats?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's going to fuck everything else up because other things are going to eat the poison sausage.
Yeah.
What in the hell, man? Why don't they ever figure that out? You can't just do that.
Yeah, so they estimated over 200,000 cats were killed in the first 12 months after the plan was announced. Dropping lethal sausages from the sky is only part of the country's efforts to eradicate the feral cats.
Yeah, they some places they have a bounty on them. Like, if you shoot cats, they'll give you money.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
they have that with wolves in some places, too. If you shoot wolves, they'll give you money because the wolves are fucking up so much wildlife. And
mate, they'll get pretty, like you said, with the coyotes and all that. Like, even just and then the bears and all that sort of stuff. Hunting's some scary stuff.
It can get real because you're out there, you're putting yourself in the food chain.
Yeah. Well, like I said, ours is obviously we've got a lot of poisonous things and little things that'll get you. But then over here, it just seems like everything's big that'll just fuck you up.
Well, Australia's crazy too because most people live on the outside. And the inside's just madness.
Yep.
You know?
Oh, mate, they're a bit different as well. I don't know if what's lucky, but when you go out west and all that, and, you know, they're just bred a bit different. So, we'll go out there and even just driving on the roads and, you know, we'll sit there and, like, we'll wave at someone and, you know, the Westies, they'll just be like, they just lift a finger up as in that's a hello. They're just bred so much different over there. It's crazy.
The people in the bush?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's what we call Westies.
Folks.
Sorry, that guy, the Westies. So.
They're spooky folks that live out in those weird places. What do you got, Jamie?
You know, we talk about that. I think you just said it too. The number of birds that they kill is like, up, at least in America, it says it's estimated 1.3 to 4 billion birds a year.
Yeah.
They add mammals to that number, which includes like reptiles and other things. Mm-hmm. 6.3 to 22.3 billion mammals are killed every year by cats in the United States.
What the fuck? That's so many. That's way more than people have been alive ever. Mm. More than all the people ever.
Crazy.
Every year, these little fucks.
Far
Plus,
out.
They're cute. You little purr. You pet them, they purr.
Yeah.
Little bit of buddy. You know, they're little murderers. It's amazing.
Crazy. Stats,
that's
eh?
A crazy stat.
Crazy stats.
In Australia, and that's just by the way, in the United States, it's even more.
Look at that!
Man.
Wow! In addition to mammals, cats kill an estimated 377 million birds and 649 million reptiles every year in Australia. That's fucking nuts.
Far out.
Yeah, some asshole brought them over there not that long ago. Mm. I think they brought them over in the 1800s.
Yeah, I've heard like a couple of different cases where they bring people in and
is that
then
what it says?
Yeah, then it just went backwards for them.
Yeah, you can't just bring things places. You can't just do that. You know, especially predators.
Well, the cane toads. So they got introduced I know you might have to get this one, but they bring them in and now they're just a complete pests. Like they're like up.
Those
and
are big fuckers.
Yeah,
aren't they?
Yeah, they're big. What they bring them here for?
Probably for some other stupid reason.
I can't remember. Yeah, I can't remember
what
it was.
Get rid of the flies.
Bring,
too many mosquitoes.
Close beetles in the sugar fields.
Yeah, there you go. Too many beetles. What do you want to do?
Yeah, you bring them, and now they're like a massive problem, you know what I mean? So,
1935, these dipshits. They're brought to Australia from Hawaii with the intention of controlling the cane beetle in the sugar cane fields in North Queensland. Cane beetles live on the high upper stalks of the cane plant. Cane toads can't jump up that far, so they barely had any impact. These fucking idiots. They didn't know jack shit in 1935. They couldn't Wikipedia shit. right? Some idiot is like, you got to justify your job. Toads. We're going to bring toads.
Have we talked about the four pest campaign that happened?
Whoa, look at the size of that prick. Look at the one in the middle. Click on that one in the middle, the middle
whoa,
picture.
Oh, shit. Yeah, that's a person. I didn't realize that was a person.
Look at that. Look at those fucks.
Yeah, man.
Jesus Christ.
Well, they started off, they're all up, they're up north in like Queensland, and then they're just, now they're all in New South Wales, and they're just expanding. It's just like going to take over Australia. Mm-hmm. I don't even know. Actually, this is the stats that I knew about like 8 years ago, so it's probably quadrupled by now, or like they probably have covered all of Australia. I don't even know.
What do they use to kill the cane toads? They're going to bring in birds?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah,
what kills?
Have we talked about the four pest campaign? That's like not ancient, but it's a historical event that happened that led to like the death of 35 million people in China.
No.
Yeah, they had a sparrow problem, or swallows, whichever, with the small bird.
Mm-hmm.
So they were an annoyance if they allowed people to kill them, or like bang pots and pans to get rid of them. That worked to get rid of them, but then all of the bugs then ate all of the rice fields. That led to a famine that led to 25 to 35 million people dying.
Oh, Jesus.
20 years later, yeah.
So it would have been better off with the birds.
Yeah, so it's like it's a historical event that people need to keep in mind when these things happen, that there's a very sensitive ecosystem.
Yeah.
Was that a 1935 as well? When was that?
It actually was the same time period.
It seemed like a bad year.
Nobody learned. Yeah, it's man. Like, I don't know, man. I don't know how they're going to get rid of those frogs. Do they have an idea?
I don't know. Like, man, I don't know too much. I just remember hearing that, so I thought I'd throw it out there. But well, I don't know. It's bloody, I think, I remember seeing videos of, and there was like just the floors absolutely covered of, in certain spots up in Queensland, like absolutely covered. Like, actually, it was in The Simpsons, wasn't it?
Was it?
I swear it was a Simpsons episode.
Yeah, the...
What is it? I would have called them Shazwazzers or something
snakes,
like that.
Someone comes, they beat them. They like they pull out the sticks and beat their bats or something like that.
Yeah.
The four pest thing was a couple of years later. It's 1958 to 1962.
Mm, interesting. 1960. So they didn't learn from 35. Well, maybe those toads taste good. Maybe they should start eating toads.
I think
frog legs are delicious.
Are they poisonous? No.
Oh, boy.
I don't know.
That's a problem.
Yeah, that's why I think they're a big one. No, maybe not. Maybe not.
Are cane toads poisonous? We'll find out here. Have you ever had frog legs?
Yes, I have.
Well, they're cooked well. They're good.
Where did I have that? I did have that, and it was actually, what was it? It was actually a mixture of, I thought, chicken and fish, the ones I had.
Yeah, similar.
Will you reckon? Or?
Yeah. But they always say everything
poisonous,
tastes like chicken.
But no one's died from that.
Oh,
okay.
It sounds like you get sick. They have boiled toad eggs.
Oh boy.
Toad eggs?
Jesus.
Okay.
So they have some sort of poison.
It says, yeah, their cane toad has poison glands through their whole life cycle.
Mm.
Depends on when it's killed. Depends on
what about
eat.
For animals?
It kills. Yeah, it's bad for animals. Bad for dogs.
Oh well, that's great. That means you can't eat them. That means these fuckers—they're running around making sure that predators don't eat them.
No frog legs in Australia.
What a dumb animal to bring over there to kill beetles. You fucking assholes. You should find that guy from 1935 and kick his ass. If you go back in time, like, what were you thinking, man? What a dumb move. Bring over a poison toad that no one can eat.
what was it for bugs? So literally for bugs. That's crazy.
Yeah, and the fact that it's poisonous, which not venomous, poisonous, which means if they eat it, they die. So these predators, if you brought over a bunch of fucking jackals or something to go eat the frogs or the toads, they would wind up dying. Cane toads, they do have venom secreting poison glands known as parotoid glands. Or swellings on each shoulder where poison is released if they are threatened, when they are threatened. If ingested, the venom can cause rapid heartbeat, excessive salivation, convulsions, and paralysis, and can result in death for many native animals. Great. So you can't even fucking kill them with predators. God, maybe we can get the cats to eat the cane toads. Maybe that's the move.
I swear, I could be wrong. Like
the mercy. Look at this. The most humane way to kill cane toads is to put them in the freezer alive. Humane? That's the most humane.
Well, I think I remember getting told back in the day, you had to kill them if you seen them or something like that.
Oh,
I think that was a rule.
Kill them if you can. The once popular method was used to kill millions of poisonous pets until it was banned 20 years ago because animal ethics committees considered it inhumane. Oh, you fucks. It's all those fucking animal rights people. They ruin everything. What about our rights? Huh? You got poison toads everywhere, assholes. How do you get rid of them? What does it say? Remove toad temptations and make your home a cane toad free zone. You need a sign. You decide, hey, we're a cane toad free zone here. Cover or bring pet food in at night as it attracts cane toads. Remove standing water. Oh, great. How are you going to do that? What about ponds? What about puddles? Remove rubbish and other debris so cane toad cannot shelter under it during the day. Keep your outside lights off when not needed. Keep toads out by creating a barrier.
Far out.
Far out indeed.
I don't know about that.
It's your fence if they can't jump that high.
Just hire people. Hire people to kill them. Give them a lot. Make it valuable to kill them.
I'm telling you, I think it was Furby. I think they'll honestly, I remember if you see one, like I think you had to. I don't know.
You're supposed to kill him?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I could be wrong. Maybe I just heard that from someone and I'm
it
running
would be
with it.
Good archery practice if you had a lot of arrows, you know, because it's not a big target. It's a good thing to shoot at. Fucking crazy assholes. Bring over fucking poisonous toads.
Estimated over 200 million. No.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, that's so crazy. That's so many toads. 200 million toads? Jesus, man. Australia.
Yeah, I don't know about that one. Crazy.
Yeah.
That's so, Australia.
What do you eat during camp? Let's back.
Well,
I've got
I've got a dietitian on board now. So he does a few of us, you know, he does EZ and that as well. And
do you get meal prep, like pre-prepared meals?
No, I used to get that, but now he just gives me a sort of game plan to go with. Oh, sorry, not game plan. A diet plan. Yeah, meal plan. And, you know, I just, yeah, obviously I got options and stuff like that. And it's a game changer, man. It really is. Like I said, from what I used to eat to now, like, and I'm talking even just a couple of fights ago. Like, you know what I mean? I was doing my own thing. And, you know, the fight week, I would literally just eat chicken and nuts. And this wasn't that long ago. I was in, you know, I was ranked and I was just eating, like, chicken and nuts and just depleting myself so much. Don't get me wrong, I would end up pretty light. But, I mean, it was not good for the body, that's for sure.
And so when will you start? So, like, say if you have a fight and it's 8 weeks out, when will you start the dieting process to try to lose weight? And when are you just eating just for health?
Yeah, well, I'm always trying to, all year round I try, except for the last few months. All year round I'm trying to eat, you know, reasonably good, you know, during the week. And then the weekends I'll sort of just do whatever. And I still do that all the way through to my fight, till about 2 weeks is my last, you know, cheat meal, as people would say. Like, you know, my last time I'll actually do that. But, you know, it's just, again, I don't know if my body just knows. Obviously, there's science to it, but sometimes I swear I'm eating the same as I get closer to the fight. Maybe I'm training that little bit harder, or maybe I'm having that little bit less sugar, or whatever it is, you know, or the sauce that I'm cutting, I don't really realize, but it's just fine little things I'm doing, and the weight just falls off.
And how much do you cut the week of the fight?
The week of the fight, I'm usually about 7 kilograms out. You know, so it seems like a lot, but I hold a lot of water. And then once
that's about 15, 16 pounds.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. So I'm about there, and, you know, a lot of it will end up coming off during the week. So again, I hold a lot of water. So I blow it up, mate. I'll look at a piece of bread and I'll put on 5 kilos of water.
Really?
Yeah. So that's just how I am. So I actually, I mean, I'll probably get myself in trouble, but I end up weighing in at 145. Or, so yeah, 145, usually a little bit less actually, last few times. And I was getting up to 160. What was it, 166 or something like that? Can't remember what it was, but I ended up getting to 76 kilograms.
Wow.
So I end up putting like
22 pounds or so.
Yes. Yeah. So I'll do that overnight. Yeah. So
how does that feel though when you do?
Well, I'm used to, I'm that weight all camp pretty much.
Right.
So that's my weight I'm comfortable at. You know what I mean? So I'm about, even 2 weeks out from my fight, I'm about 75 kg, you know, maybe 74, but I'm pretty close to it.
It's a real science, isn't it?
It is, 100%. And again, to be able to eat what I eat, you know, fight week, and I look at the food now at fight week and be like, what, how good's this? You know, all over my social media, I'm just like, what? Look how lucky I am. Before, when I used to do that, like, you know, fight week and do my stories, I'm just, yeah, literally show like 6 pieces of nuts and a little piece of chicken, where now I got like mad, like in meals, and they, you know, obviously decorate.
So what changed? How did he change it?
I just, yeah, like, again, they just know. Like, before, I didn't know. I just knew I had to cut sodiums and carbs, and I'll do that, you know, 4 or 5 days out, and then, again, I'll deplete a lot of water, but I'll, like, you know, drink distilled water and stuff like that. And but, you know, again, you're still doing similar sort of stuff, but everything's more calculated now, and they do all the measurements and, you know, calculate everything, and, this again, the science to it, it's crazy. And then the last, now I'm usually a couple of kilos heavier when I got a sweat, like from the night before, but it comes off easy and I feel good. So I got energy and it's easy to come off.
So, like, what's a typical meal for breakfast for you?
Fight week?
No, like during training.
Okay,
when
oats,
you're getting
oats. Usually, oats. When I get close, I love my oats. You know, like it heated up, and because it always fills me up. I feel like I can, I should be eating more, but I don't even need to. It fills me up that much, like, you know. So, there's some meals like now because we train so hard. That's what I mean by the difference. You know, I was eating next to nothing to now not even being able to eat some of the stuff that they want me to eat. I'm like, man, I can't eat that much. Like, you know what I mean? I probably could, but I'm like, I don't need to, you know what I mean? And,
right.
And,
that's,
you know,
amazing.
Yeah, because we do like anywhere 3-4 sessions a day, and some of them, like, you know, we tell them what workouts, and, you know, we've got a scale on 1 to 10, how
You're
hard they
four
are.
4 workout sessions
yeah,
a day?
Yeah, some days, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, so I'll do, you know, usually 3 on average, but yeah, again, like it's going to be controlled. It doesn't mean I'm actually, you know, going the balls to the wall every session. You got to be structured to it. But I'll do strength and conditioning a couple of days a week, and then I usually, when I'm back home in Australia, it's the free sessions every day, and then sometimes I do strength and conditioning. So when we go to, you know, New Zealand, it's usually in the morning we'll do a couple of sessions, and then we'll get a session at night as well. So it's but again, with some of these training sessions. Full on, like I said, and we're burning like anywhere from 1,200 calories to more, like a 1,400, and we're fit. So to burn them sort of calories while you're that fit, you know, that's a lot of hard work.
Mm.
So we're doing that, and then they're like, you know, they've got to feed us like all this, you know, so we can have the energy to train. Like, and that's what I mean. Like some meals, I'm like, man, I don't think I could even eat that. But it's crazy. It's to be able to do that and like be happy with what you're eating and then go into fight week and stuff like that. It's a game changer. It really is.
Yeah, that's where the value of having someone as an actual nutritionist really comes into play, where they tell you, no, this is the calories that you need, and this is going to give you all the electrolytes and the protein, the carbohydrates. This is everything.
Yeah.
You're good. Like, when you're like, are you sure?
Yeah, man, that's exactly right. But that's how it is. That's what I will be like. You know, while I'm eating, I'm like, man, I don't know if I should be eating this.
And the funny thing is, if you're starving yourself with the chicken and the nuts, like, you're not going to lose as much weight, and it's not going to be as easy because your body's going to try to hold on to food, and you're not going to have any energy.
Yeah, well, I'd only done the chicken and nuts fight week, but I mean, again, earlier in my career, I was just eating nowhere near enough. I remember I sort of went off my wife's meal plan that she had, and like, she wasn't even training, and it was a meal that she was meant to be having, like, you know, the meals that she was having, not even training. And then I'm obviously a few kilos heavier. I'm working a lot harder. I'm obviously, you know, training and doing all that training. I'm trying to stick to this diet that she's meant to lose weight on. You know what I mean? So that's what I would sort of do my diets. And that's when the staph infections always come, and it's just crazy.
Yeah. So when you say you're working out 3 to 4 times a day, like, how do you break up your sessions? Is someone dictating what you're going to be doing for the day? Do you have someone who plans out your workouts?
Oh, you most weeks are pretty much the same, but obviously you're going to have your, like, that's the thing. Like, you know, Joe, my coach, no one knows me better than he is. So he knows when I'm not on, you know, he knows when something's happened. So there was before the Max fight. There was a, you know, I don't want to miss training sessions, you know what I mean? So I'm going to go there. But they could see I was run down, and that's when injuries can happen, and that's when you can get sick and all this type of stuff. So they pulled me up. And as much as I didn't want, I was like, no, I'll be right. They didn't let me train that night and have like the day off. And, man, honestly, the next day, the next sessions after that, I was on fire, and I finished, you know what I mean? And perfect, you know, that was at the time, I'm like, oh, you know, I don't want to miss out on trail. I don't want to feel like you know, I don't feel like I'm not working hard enough, you know what I mean? So that's sort of how I was thinking. But then the next day, it just made me even work so much harder. And I done the VO2 max session, wrestling session, and absolutely killed it, you know what I mean? And that was my last week of training, and I just finished it perfect, like, sort of, you know, right on peak. You know, obviously that's why you structure to peak, you know, a week out. And that was, you know, it was perfect.
As with the nutritionist, it shows you the value of having a real professional and particularly someone who really knows you and knows, like, you're not going to slack off. You're a guy who's going to go balls out.
Yeah.
So if you're tired like that, something's up. And so many coaches, or so many fighters rather, don't have a coach like that.
Yeah.
And so they will overtrain, and they'll come into a fight beaten down.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate. It really is.
That's what I mean. The 1%ers, and you were saying with the mental coaches and all that, like, I just think there's so many places that you could really, really, you know, work with it. And I think that will help in the end, that 1%.
Now, how much of your camp is dedicated to strength and conditioning? How many strength and conditioning sessions do you do?
I'll do anywhere from 2 to 3.
Two to three a week?
So I'm doing it, yeah, 2 to 3 a week.
And what kind of stuff are you doing?
Again, I started with BayMed Performance. So they come on board because I used to get a lot of...
What is the name of it?
BayMed. BayMed.
So, BayMed?
Yeah, Performance. So they deal with a lot of athletes. So they do like rugby league teams and all that sort of stuff. It was a... That was a game changer for me because I was having a lot of problems with my back before I was thinking. This was before Chad Mendes. So there was even times in my career where I was like thinking I might have to like give this up. Like, and really? Even after the Elkins fight.
What was wrong with your back?
I just, like, I have a bulging disc, but like I would get all the sciatica down the leg. And at the time, I just thought it was so much worse than it was. And it was mentally getting me. And, you know, it was just,
Where's the bulging disc?
Lower ones. Oh, I couldn't even tell you which one it was, but the lower one. So I've got a couple of But I even went to a specialist and they were telling me that, you know, to give it up. Like, I don't know whether it was just something that, you know, he has to say, like, to cover himself or whatever.
Those guys are always so negative. Yeah. They always say that.
They told me to give it up. And, like, again, it was already mentally getting me. And then I had these guys come on board and they're like, no, there's nothing wrong, mate. 80% of the people literally have bulging discs. You know, don't worry. Until your foot, you know, stays flat and you like drags and all that sort of stuff from the sciatica, or you can't control your bowels. That's when we'll start. You know,
you can't control your bowels. Exactly. Once you start shitting yourself, we'll tell you to stop.
That's when we might maybe do the surgery or something like that. So this is sort of what, again, they were trying to get in my head and really sort of just, you know, let me sort of smash this mentally as well. Yeah. And so they started getting me thinking like, and again, I'm pretty good at this type of stuff. So I'm like, all right, no worries. They got me on a mad program. They built a strength program specifically for my body, you know, for what I do, fighting and all that. So it's an absolute game changer. And I don't have problems. Now when I used to, there was times where I was having like anywhere from 14 weeks to not training before I fought, like Elkins, Elkins, Jeremy Kennedy. I was doing next to nothing in between the fight and then literally having 6 weeks to do.
Wow.
Yes.
So you're trying to recover. Well, and I'm trying just dealing with the pain.
Yeah, so my back will go and then I'll have like 2 weeks off, try to get back into it, but it'll happen again. And I was doing this for like 14 weeks straight and then getting told I'm fighting and then, you know, do a camp and be like, oh, I've got 6 weeks to get myself ready.
Do you do any spinal decompression or anything like that?
No, not that. We just do a lot of it's just, again, hip mobility and all that. I get So a lot of times I'm doing a lot of mobility before I do sessions and stuff like that. That really does help with what I'm doing. You know, again,
I want you to try this thing I have out there, this Teeter Dex. It's this thing you climb into. It's real simple. You put your legs behind it almost like a leg curl, and then you lean forward. And as you lean forward, all the weight is just decompresses on your back, and particularly your lower back. It's fantastic for it. It feels so good.
Yeah.
I do it after every workout. I do two things for my back that are really big. One is a thing called the reverse hyper. You ever use one of those?
No. Well, is that like with the round thing?
No, that's another one. That's a hip, glute, hamstring thing. The reverse hyper is this machine that was created by Louis Simmons from Westside Barbell. And it's like a flat bench. You climb your upper body up on the bench, and then you hook your legs into this thing, and you lift your legs up, and then you let them drop down. And as it drops down, it decompresses.
Oh, okay.
And as you lift it up, it strengthens.
All right.
It comes from this guy. Louis Simmons is like he's a powerlifting legend, and he had a back injury, and they were trying to do surgery on him.
Yep.
And he was like, well, what's it from? They were like, it's from compression. He's like, well, I got to figure out how to decompress it. So he figured out this machine that created active decompression. I have one out here. I swear by it. I love it. There it is right there. It shows it how it works.
Okay.
So when you lift up, don't stare at that dude's ass. When you lift up, it goes up. And then when it lifts down, it actually pulls the back and decompresses it. And it feels great. Yeah. Pull that video that right there. You can see it. If you watch that video, you can see that's Louis. He's a fucking character. He's a really wild guy. But so... See how it's going down?
Yeah.
That thing pulls your back down. So what I'll do is, and on the up, it strengthens the back muscles in a real unique way.
Yeah.
So what I'll do is I'll do that, and then after I do that, then I'll decompress with the Dex. That's the Dex. That's the thing right there. See, so you climb into that thing, and then see how she's got her hands on those handles?
Yeah.
You let go of that, and it just makes your lower back like, I'm going to give it to you to try out here.
No,
you're going to climb in there, and you're going to go, I need this.
Yeah, man,
I love it. I have one at home too. I swear by it.
Mm.
I fucking swear by this thing.
Yeah,
really good for stretching the back.
Look into having that
because your own body weight is like pulling your spine apart and decompressing it. It just relaxes everything. It's very nice.
Yeah. Well, again, it's just you need these types of things. You need obviously the knowledge is getting there with everything. You know what I mean? The knowledge is out there. So
what kind of shit did they have you doing?
Like a lot of it was a strengthening. So I was a a big problem of mine, like I was getting told, like, lock your core, like when I'd get my back, you know, and there was a bit more old school type of stuff, just lock your core, you know, don't do nothing, you know, I'd literally do nothing for like a whole week and then try and get back training and I'd injure it again. I would, like, literally, if you told me to stand up, you know, I would, like, hold my breath and, like, stand up, you know what I mean? I
was like,
that's just sort of my mental side of the sort of where I was at with it. And it was, you know what I mean? So they had to change all that. They had to, you know, relax, you know, let me, like, literally, they said, if you drop a, like, this one thing he said to me the first time I met him, he goes, you drop a pencil, pick the fucking pencil up. You know, you don't have to, don't fucking game plan how you're going to pick up that pencil. And like, you get what I mean? He's trying to get in my head, like, just relax, you know what I mean? And the training, even the first few sessions I started doing from my strength program, like, because I would always, like, really hyperextend my back and, like, you know, thinking I'm keeping it straight and, you know, think I'm doing the right thing. But so they had to try and change my posture and everything while I was doing workouts just so I could start, you know, doing things properly. Like, even when I used to do deadlifts, I would, like, try and stay as upright as I could because I thought my back would go. Mm-hmm. And my back would go every time I did deadlifts and that because my technique was bad and just little things like that. So that's what I mean by having a strength program and all this sort of stuff. And now, like, if I do get a flare-up, you know, within, you know, even the next day, I'm back into training, you know what I mean? Where before I'd have, like, 2 weeks off, literally 2 weeks off, where now I'm, like, back at training. Like, they're like, you can't stop moving. Like, you need to keep moving. That'll, you know, don't let your body lock up. My brain would literally make it lock up. I'll get my hip out to the side. It was bad. Like, I really was. I'd get a flare-up, and I'd be like, oh. And then my brain would just tell, oh, yeah, go back to that position, you know, where you go. And my hip would go out, and I wouldn't be able to walk for a few days. And it's just, yeah, that was keep happening. But now we're on top of it now. It's a game changer. Now I'm having camps, like, you know, full proper camps. So that happened before Chad Mendes. So that's when I ended up seeing them. And I had my first, like, proper 12-week camp for the Chad Mendes.
That's amazing.
Fight. Yeah.
That's amazing. So what kind of stuff do they have you doing other than, you said, deadlifts and strengthening exercises?
Yeah, a lot of glutes. Because my right glute wasn't even firing.
Because, like, of the sciatic?
Yeah, just because, yeah. Well, just not just that, just the fact that I would use my back muscles and core to do everything. I wasn't ever activating my glutes to do stuff because, you know, I was just using the wrong muscles, thinking, you know, I was doing it right. Where now, like, yeah, that's a big part of my sort of mobility. Before I do it, I do my mobility and I get the glutes firing and stuff like that. And every time I do that, I feel good. So a lot of the strength program is still building the glutes and stuff like that. Obviously, you're still doing your core exercises. Now we're at a stage where we can just sort of build everything, you know, and even just having people that know what they're doing. Again, you could go there and they can just work on everything and, oh yeah, let's go nuts. But, you know, the specific sort of training, knowing that I got to go and do my other sessions at the other gym and all that, so they all take it all into play. And, you know, that everything's just real structured, you know. Training weeks are so much more structured than it used to be. And you're seeing it, you know, not only in performances, but even my body and being able to train. It's a game changer.
That's amazing. Wow, you're really, very, really, really fortunate that you found those guys.
Yeah, 100%. It was huge.
And do you do any yoga or stretching or anything?
I do, like, yeah, stretches and all that. Like, I don't do it, I'll be honest, I don't do it enough. Like, I should be sticking to it, especially when I'm not, while I'm back home, I do that in my sessions that I'm doing with them. So I'm doing that. I'm meant to be doing that every day, but, you know, I lack it. Sometimes I should be doing a lot more. So sometimes I won't do it and I'll feel like I get tired. Every time I go on an airplane, I come to, you know, come to America and all that, I come and I'm just stiff as a board, you know what I mean? But as soon as I do these mobility sort of exercises and stretches and like get the glutes going, I'm 100% like straight away.
Show me someone who doesn't have a back issue that trains martial arts and I'll show you someone who doesn't train enough.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly right.
You're going to have a back problem, at least a little bit of stiffness, you know?
It's just, yeah, that's just always, you know.
Yeah, it comes with it.
What is it? You see sometimes like memes and they'll be like going, best childhood memory, not having a sore back, you know, things like that.
So kids, man. My middle daughter, she's 11, and she's so fucking flexible, her spine. Mm. She could stand and then bend backwards and put her hands behind her on the ground and then kick her legs up in the air and go over. I'm like, what in the fuck are you made out of? Little kids, man.
Yeah, man.
They're made out of rubber.
Yep. That's all it is, like that. Actually, yeah, man, 100%. Like, even with my daughter once, actually, I'm going to probably cop some flack for this, but I remember I was, you know, sometimes they just, I didn't know. So one time she just like sort of fell and I was like holding her by her arm and she ended up like having like a little dislocate, like sort of elbow. And I didn't know. Like she was just crying. I thought she was crying because we left the park and stuff like that. And I just the thing, like, I literally just had, and she just fell, and I just, like, sort of held her. Yeah, like, well, like, just, well, yeah, I just grabbed her by the arm. And,
right.
And, like, you know, it just, again, like, it hyper lucky didn't break her infant, but obviously being young and they're a bit more flexible, but, like, full hyperextended her to her arm, but she was all right a couple of days. It wasn't too bad. I literally thought I broke my daughter's arm, like, when I went to hospital. No. I was like, well, imagine telling people this story, you know what I mean? So it's crazy, but, yeah, some of the same things you see the kids do, it's crazy.
Well, they're built to fall down.
Yeah,
you know,
like, it's just, don't hold on to the arm when they do. So
yeah, dislocate their arm. So what about running? Are you doing a lot of running?
I don't do as much running. I sometimes do the weight loss and all that, but, you know, I get, you know, obviously when you try and get your heart rate at a certain amount and doing your, what is it, the endurance, you would know
VO2
about this.
Max?
Yeah, no, not VO2 max, like when you're doing when you're running, a consistent run or something, mm-hmm. you're keeping your heart rate at a certain amount. I'm the type of person, I'd rather be drilling at the gym. I'll keep my heart rate there and I'll be drilling and I'll just do hours, or, you know, an hour.
And do you use a chest monitor or
something?
Yeah,
we do.
Like,
yeah, we do. Yeah, we do that with a lot of our sessions. Mm-hmm. And that's, again, we just try and structure everything. We're all about the science and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's so important, but so many people don't do it. They just go by feel, you know. But if you really have great coaches, especially great scientific-based strength and conditioning mm-hmm. coaches that really understand the science behind getting your body into a great endurance spot.
Mm. Yeah. Even we even do, like, we get our HRV. So every morning to see if it tells us if we can train. Or usually say, yeah, you're good to go. Or something like, all right, pull up, you know.
Right.
You know, so it tells you how your body sort of feels.
Yeah,
I don't know how it works.
Whoop strap. I wear one of these things. Oh, okay. Heart rate variability straps. Yeah, it's big. It's big. It shows you if you're fucking wrecked.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you feel like maybe I'm just being a pussy, mm-hmm. and then I can look at my phone and I go, "No, man, you're fucking. You haven't recovered."
Like, yeah.
There's a thing that'll show you where your static heart rate is, where mm-hmm. your normal resting heart rate is, and where it is now. It shows you've trained too hard.
Yeah. And then sometimes we'll look and be like, "Yeah, you're just being a little bitch.
You're just being a little bitch." It should say that too.
Yeah. Yeah, man, it's crazy.
So you prefer drilling to things like running? Yeah,
I've done
a
fair bit of running, like when I was in Thailand and stuff. Like, you know, they're obviously really
make
big
you run,
it. Yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly right. But I'll be honest, I don't do as much now. So again, doing the four sessions a day, four sessions a day. I just I'm the type of person that I'm just a believer of it drilling. You know, I can be a lot more fight specific when I'm getting that heart rate there. So that's just how I am. Everyone's
different,
though. Well,
I mean, obviously it's working for you.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes that's a big part of it, too, is like having a thing that you believe in and the thing that gives you confidence. And, it's obvious that you have great endurance as well. So it is physically working for you as well.
Yeah, exactly.
So you'll do three different sessions at least a day, and you're breaking them up like a strength and conditioning, maybe a boxing workout, kickboxing, jiu-jitsu, maybe an MMA workout. Mm-hmm. Like, how does it structure usually?
Yeah, most mornings you'll do like an MMA sort of workout. So you put it all, I'm all about putting it all together. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't like to separate each discipline, but obviously we still do that as well. We'll do like wrestling some days, a couple of days a week, and then the jiu-jitsu every morning we'll do as well. We've got wall work sessions, and you know, it's just we just do everything. And then you've got certain sessions that are like VO2 max wrestling and things like that. So it's just...
And these are mapped out by your coaches in advance?
Yeah, yeah.
So you know, like, what the week is going to be like?
Yeah, yeah. Pretty much the same every week.
That's the difference between now and the old days, man. The old days, guys would just work out till they dropped. Yeah. No one knew what the fuck anybody was doing right. You know, no one really knew.
Yeah.
What about sparring? And what is your philosophy on sparring hard versus sparring light?
Yeah, man. Well, you know, especially Joe, like, we're all about, you know, more technical sparring. Obviously, we have like our Saturdays is where we spar, and that's a little bit more full on. But you know, you don't get paid in the gym. And again, if you're going balls of war every time you spar, you know, I mean, like, how do you learn as well? I believe that, you know, keeping it a little bit more chill, you can work on things.
Yes.
That's why I love training with all different types of styles. It's like, even if I train with someone that's not on my level, that's where I can learn so much as well. That's when I can try things, right? There's things that if you're going against someone that's better than you or just as good, and you can't make any mistakes, so you're playing it safe, like in sparring every day, you know what I mean? But again, we're all about, you know, keeping it pretty chill, you know, especially during the week. We spar probably like, you know, anywhere from four sessions maybe even a week. But a lot of times it's very, very, very chill, you know, very technical, we call it technical sparring. And again, that's where you learn, and that's when I think it works. It's been working for me. But then our Saturdays is where we go a little bit harder, but not too hard.
So it's never like a full-on brawl?
Nah, never. Yeah, never a full-on brawl.
That's another brilliant thing that people are learning today. Because mm-hmm. back in the day, everybody used to just brawl.
Yeah, man.
I mean, there's so many stories. Like, the best stories come out of Brazil. The Curitiba stories from Shoot the Box.
Okay, yeah.
Those guys used to knock each other out in training and just mm-hmm. keep training.
Yeah.
Wake up. Get back in there.
Man.
Just push them back in there.
And you could just imagine, you know, it's not too good for the brain.
Terrible,
man, you know?
For the brain. I mean,
getting punched in the head and Vegas trips, not good for the brain.
Both things.
Yeah.
Well, listen, brother, I appreciate you coming down here, man, and talking to us. And nothing but the best of luck to you in the future. And I really enjoy watching you fight.
Thank you.
I'm really excited to see the rematch between you and Max. I mean, two fucking awesome guys that are great fighters. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
Me too. Let's hope it happens. And stay tuned. I reckon we'll have something soon.
Instagram, Alex Volkanovski. Twitter, same.
Yep.
Have you got a Facebook?
Yeah,
as well?
Facebook. Yeah, Alexander the Great Volkanovski. Go on there. Or, yeah.
What about? Do you have a website?
We're actually doing one right now. We are doing that one, and stay tuned for that, and I'll have all that up very soon.
All right, beautiful. Thank you, brother. Appreciate you.
Thank
man.
You.
Bye, everybody.
Oh, I've been needing to piss for a while too. I've been drinking all that water.